It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Anako's here. Alex Lindsay's here. And most importantly, Jason Snell's here back from his visit to the Apple campus. He has his first-person, hands-on look at the Apple Vision Pro. We'll also talk about the other Macintosh computers Apple announced last week and the future of the iMac. All that and more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 874, recorded Tuesday, June 13th, 2023. Distracted by the dinosaurs. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like forgetting to mute yourself on Zoom and then everybody hears you trash-talking your coworkers. Not good. Protect your online privacy by visiting expressvpn.com/MacBreak, and you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. And by HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. Go to HelloFresh.com/MacBreak16 and use the code MacBreak16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. And by ZocDoc. When you're not feeling your best and just trying to hold it together, finding great care shouldn't take up all your energy. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show we get together with all the crew and talk about Apple. And Jason Snell's back from his little sojourn at the Apple campus.
Where the sun shines and the fog does not eclipse the summer in the South Bay. It was so warm and nice in Cupertino, other than it rained at one point and everybody at Apple didn't know what to do, basically. Like, what do we do with this? There was a man with a squeegee trying to wipe things down. It was very confusing.
Did it rain during the event?
It rained at that time the next day.
Okay.
When I was sitting waiting for my Apple Vision Pro hands-on experience, the sky just opened up and the man with the squeegee was trying to squeegee the entrance to the special lounge where we were all sitting. And he was like Sisyphus with the squeegee.
Yeah.
He just was never going to win that battle.
He's a human windshield wiper is what he is.
Yeah.
Andy Anako's also here at WGBH Boston and parts elsewhere. Hello, Andrew.
Hey there. I know we're all excited to hear like Jason's firsthand reports of Vision Pro. I'm already excited to see that there are no longer any red marks around his face where it met him. So any worries that like it causes an allergic reaction that would last at least a week, absolutely dispelled today. We're on the board already.
What a relief. And Mr. Alex Lindsay, officehours.global. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be here.
So, Jason, you got to try them on. In fact, your Six Colors article, Eyes and Head On, get it, with the Apple.
I took it head on. Fit it right in the forehead. I could never get it to fit exactly right. I came out of there feeling like I was...
Really? It didn't
Neanderthal
sit nicely on your face?
That's happened with other VR headsets I've tried, and they made the claim that they've got this one piece that fits the light shield that is, like, there are going to be a lot of sizes of them, but they didn't have that many sizes of them.
Right.
For whatever reason, I could never get comfortable with it.
Didn't they say they were going to scan your head and then...
Oh, yeah, they did.
Custom...
But if their plan is to have 15 sizes or 12 sizes at launch and they've only got 4 now,
right.
Then they scanned my face, which they did do very much like Face ID. And then I guess they looked at it and said, well, I don't know what to do here. Just stick the medium on and we'll see what happens.
We got Jason Neanderthal Snell over here. Yep. You got any Beetlebrow face masks?
There's also something interesting that someone on social media pointed out that I missed in the keynote. Some of like the canned fake living room videos they had like a strap over the top of their head.
Yeah, we all had that.
I never talked about it. You all had that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So, it was a Velcro top strap to help with, you know, help with stabilization.
Keeps the weight off.
And carrying the weight across your whole head. Okay. And yeah, they did have that. And it was nice. All the materials. You will be surprised. I don't know why. It's who knows. You will be surprised to hear that the materials made in the headband and the strap are of the highest quality. They're very, very well made.
Made with the best because it's Apple, lint, of course, from the finest
fine
rags.
Corinthian leather. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oculus Pro or whatever they call it, Meta Quest Pro, has an optional top strap, and I actually don't use it, but I don't wear it for very long. So I think for lengthy periods of time, you might want to have that.
Yeah,
top strap. So that's not an option. That's something that comes with. It sounds like.
I think so.
We don't
I
know.
Think so.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
But yeah, there's so much we don't know about this product. We only know what Apple wants us to know about this product,
right.
And even barely that.
I am. I have a new bet that they will not ship it with spooky eyes. But I'm just. That's my my guess.
That is not a bad guess. I don't know for sure. I'm just saying that's. They got a lot of gambling. They got a lot riding on that. It's got to either work completely 100% non-goofy, or let's just wait for it.
Those lenticular screens must add a bit to the bill of materials. And
I'm sure it does. I mean, it's very clever. And they've said, like, you know, you can't just put a screen on it showing eyes, because if you're off axis, it looks like a screen showing eyes, like they're following you or something. It's weird. So they did this lenticular thing. But I will say, again, nobody has seen that feature, right? It's in some of those videos. I'm unclear whether they actually are even there.
You don't see it in your demo.
Nobody saw it in person. The closest we got is that in the demo we did get a FaceTime call from somebody who was using a digital persona, presumably the same technology that creates the digital persona face creates the little eye area that gets put on that display,
because those eyes aren't a picture of your eyes, they're a digital persona of your eyes.
They're taking picture of your expressions from your eyes and using it to do it, but it's not a one-to-one.
They're in the Memoji fashion.
Yeah, in a high, think of a very, very high-res Memoji. Although I'll say, like, I had a very positive experience with the headset. I think that as a piece of technology, the Vision Pro is remarkable. And that's the combination, the Apple combination of the hardware and the software. Incredibly impressive piece of technology. However, and we can talk about it or not, whatever you like, but I will say the one place where I went, whoa now, was the digital persona, which during the keynote, I read it. I was more optimistic than some of the people around me. I was sort of like, it might be okay. And other people were like, oh, hell no, basically. And then I saw it in the demo and I was like, oh, no. It is the uncanniest of valleys. It is, you know, the person I was talking to made a facial expression. And I was like, no, you are, you know, no.
Well, it's interesting because
Satan away.
They made an interesting choice with FaceTime. That FaceTime would not be a legless immersive experience as in the Meta experience. It would be a FaceTime with a screen, but then they still have this issue with there's no camera on you.
Well,
so they have to fake you, and the fake you, it sounds like, is not very good. I'm going to say this really strikes me as a concept car. You know how in the Detroit Auto Show, they show this car that you go, that's a wonderful, but it never ships. And I think this is their concept car. And you now explain to me why we never saw anybody, Tim Cook on down, wearing these.
Because no, because that feature doesn't even.
The spooky eyes weren't there. I wonder if the spooky eyes.
It doesn't work yet.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, you're right. I think you're right. I think the question is, you know, how committed are they to this hardware being final? They may be across that line, but you're right in spirit, because a lot of the stuff that's in here is very much beholden to Apple's concept of what this thing is, right? So the eyes are there. The eyesight thing is there because Apple is trying to send the message that they want you present in the world, that this is an AR product, and that if you can see out, people can see in, right? And that it's an indicator that they can see you. And like, I get it entirely from a philosophical point of view, but I have with some of these features, I wonder, FaceTime is like this too. I wonder whether at some point the initial philosophy will get overridden by user reaction, and they'll realize, oh, like the dogma we went into when we designed this product is actually not how users feel. And then they change the product. It may be too late for this one, but that's undoubtedly going to happen. I think the FaceTime in a window is a great example of that, where I'm actually not convinced that that's the only way they're going to do FaceTime. I'm convinced that's the only way they wanted to show FaceTime last week, right? Because we're talking about a lot of time here. There are so many things that I'm sure that they have very carefully omitted entirely because either they're not ready to show them or they don't want people talking about them when they're talking about this product. And, you know, they've got, this is unusual for Apple in that they've got, you know, 6+ months of runway here so that they can be very picky in what they disclose now versus in 6 months.
I think it's the least compelling thing that they showed there and the most absurd. Like it's not like, I think there's a lot of things about the Vision headset that work. The moment I even saw it in the keynote, I was like, oh, it's going to be a bad idea. Like that's gonna, like that is going to really, it was like Polar Express, you know, and, you know, it's about the Polar Express level. And I think that they just, it's so hard to do. I really thought that they were going to use Memojis. Like I thought that Memojis was the answer to that. That's why they had us all building them. That's why they got it. And I bet you that there's going to be an option.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And everyone's just going to go to, I'm just going to use my Memoji and we're all going to be fine. And because everything about Memoji works.
Yeah, they're just too proud of this. And so they don't want you to think about Memoji because that's like the fallback. They're so proud of this thing. And I think either it's going to have to get a lot better or they're going to have to just say, well, yeah, it's if you find this uncanny, you can just use your Memoji, which is, you know, because all the Memoji is also reading your face and generating a facial expression based on it. It's just much less of an attempt for it to be real.
By lowering that resolution and make it not look exactly like you, your mind immediately. It's why why you watch a Pixar. As soon as you get to the point where you're real, the only person that has figured this out, in my opinion, is James Cameron and maybe Weta, you know, in the world with millions and millions or hundreds of millions of dollars, they figured out how to get that to work.
And not in real time. Right.
And not in real time. Exactly.
And it's the famous Scott McCloud, understanding comics, like, transition where it's like there's a point between absolutely abstract smiley face and absolutely photographically real where you're getting the best of both worlds, where it's a cartoon version of somebody with just enough details that you absolutely emotionally connect to it, not so much that it has to be now spot on. And I think that's I got the impression from from everybody's hands-on experience that maybe Apple's real goal with that demo was to make sure that the information comes back that these displays are incredible. I can read text at any size, any distance. The 3D effect is impeccable. And also not quite so many people come back saying after half hour, I got nauseous or I got headaches. Right. Because just like with the Apple Watch, so long as they get the hardware right, they can build the software, they can fix the software, they can hold back software features until they're ready. But the thing that will cause this to be an absolute utter first day failure is if people put it on and say, my God, this isn't nearly half as good as my $500 Quest. This isn't nearly, I'm not going to put this on for more. I can see having this for games, but the Apple thinks I'm going to use this as my 4K Mac monitor and use this like all afternoon. No way.
Yeah, they want to dazzle you with their tech prowess, right? That's number one thing they're trying to do here is have everybody go, wow, look at Apple. They were capable of making this product, which, by the way, I admit to be dazzled, right? Like, I think this is an incredibly impressive product. Let's separate. There are two stories here, right? There's will it sell and do people want it? And there's what is this product? And this product is amazing. It is an amazing work of technology and also of user interface. The software in it is incredible. But like what we got last week was one, Apple showing you their tech skills and doing this thing. And then all of us who tried it could see that the refresh rate is amazing. It looks not like reality, but like very close to reality when you're using pass through mode. All that stuff is impressive. And then the other thing they were trying to do is, I think, blunt criticism of the story that would be Apple wants to cut you off from the world. So everything Apple did was like, no, we are being humane here. The word I keep coming back to is humane. It's like the headband is soft woven material. We can see your eyes when you can see us. Everything is a default to AR, not VR. Everything defaults to you seeing everything around you. They had that ridiculous shot in the promo video where somebody is packing their suitcase while wearing the headset, which is just like, it's bananas. Yes. But I know why it's there. It's there because they want to say, look, you're in the world with this thing. And I think that literally was their number two goal with this product, is to stop people from saying Apple wants you to put a thing on your face where you never see anybody ever again, because they don't want to be seen as being kind of a detriment to society. And I think that was what they were going for.
I think the part of it was just like, oh my God, they're so comfortable and lightweight, I forgot I had them on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, they say
they've integrated into my lifestyle completely.
You know, they say a camel is a horse designed by committee. I think Apple has created a camel here, where a lot of different inputs created, or somebody else called it the Homer Simpson's car. They created this this thing, and they wanted to say, I want to show sweater. I want to show, and I mean, it's a tough category when you're already, before you even release the product, saying, no, it's not like what you think. It's a really tough category. I wonder if so let's do some specifics. You were in glasses. Did they did you get the Zeiss lenses put in and all that?
They basically had a lens crafters on site. I mean, they had a guy who took my glasses and scanned them, and so they knew my prescription. And they then presumably had a bank of the magnetic snap in adjusters that they found the ones that most closely matched it. And there was the way it worked is you walk in, they scan your face, they scan your glasses, and then you sit in something that's very much
what
like
do they scan your
airline.
Face with? They scan your face with a headset
with an iPhone. Actually, and this is going to be the way they're going to do it when you buy this thing, is that it's going to be integrated with the Apple Store app, and they will actually, they scan it like Face ID. You know, you turn your face around.
So
and
you'll
get
have
the contours
to get fitted
face.
At an Apple Store to get this.
Well, you could do it in the Apple Store app. If you don't want to go visit, they said they anticipate most people will want to actually try this before they buy it. Go figure. But if you just wanted to buy it sight unseen, you would scan with the Apple Store app.
On your iPhone.
On your iPhone at home, and it would send that data, or it would send what your size choice was. And that's for that light shield, I think, more than anything.
And you would send them your prescription?
Well, I think not them. If it's anything like what Meta does, I think I literally used an online glasses retailer. So I sent them my prescription, and they sent me the adjusters for my Quest 2. So I imagine it would be like that.
The people who buy this will have to be extremely motivated. To wear it.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if you need a glasses adjustment, you'll have to order that. And then you have to do this. I mean, the sizing thing is probably not a big deal. Apple said they figure about half of the addressable market is people who wear glasses. So if you're in that half like I am, then I mean, all I did was literally forward the PDF of my prescription to, you know, whatever eyeglasses discount, you know, whatever the one is that Meta uses as their partner.
Apple
will do the same.
I can put the Quest Pro on over my glasses, and I actually do that, which I know is stupid, but
I did. It just slowly destroyed my glasses.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
And that's actually the primary reason I stopped using it.
Yeah, because I'm not committed enough to buy lenses for my Meta Quest Pro. So what
and
is
the fact
the
that they didn't have it, you know, and I think that Apple, I mean, I'm curious about this. So with Jason, it's a magnetic, just the lenses snap in, snap out.
That's what they say. But again, the way this worked was they measured me, then I sat in the airport lounge while behind the scenes elves with an assembly line are putting them all together for the rooms. Because it's like an individual demo. So there were just a bunch of rooms and a door. You're led to a door, and there's a PR person and a product marketer inside and the headset. So it was already set up for me by the time I walked
in.
This is Apple. It was, I don't know. I mean, I guess a little bit. Like I said, I think it was more like an airport lounge, and then you led into a kind of fake living room, and it was very homey. Mm-hmm. For a temporary structure built on the soccer field at Apple Park, it was very homey.
How many demos do you think they gave? It really seemed like they were, it wasn't like the
Did they
iPhone
have an omelet
the
station?
Launch.
That's what it, I want to know.
It seemed like they got as many people in
they
it.
They got hundreds in, right? It looks like.
There were very light snacks. I would say that venue could probably do, it was a half hour actually in the room. There's probably a reset, but let's ballpark it and say that maybe it was 25 an hour.
Nice.
And they did it for several, you know, at least 2 days, but still that there's a limit there. That's what, whatever that is. That's a few hundred, that's 400 or 500 people. That at most, and maybe they had some other stations elsewhere for developers that were not part of the PR queue that I went through, but like, it's a very small number because this was a super, I mean, literally every single person had a PR handler and a product marketing person. Wow. From Vision Pro. It was a 2-to-1 ratio. College students know that's pretty good if you've got two instructors and one student.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild. Yeah.
So they're
they missed a bet. They should have had a severance.
His own defense.
They should have had a severance egg bar though. They really missed a bet. It would have. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they want people getting loaded up on grease and protein just before trying on the new VR headset.
You got to do the cross promo thing.
Jazz.
You really do.
Smooth jazz.
So you liked wearing it. You, as you point out in your article, you have experience with the PlayStation VR and the Meta Quest 2. Yeah. So you're no newbie to this experience.
I didn't see the Quest Pro, but I've seen those other two.
Yeah, I feel like the Quest Pro is just like a little bit better.
Higher res Quest 2. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think it's really good. I mean, I think that the imagery is really great. The 3D effects were good.
What stands out? What is the difference between this, I guess, and the Quest?
I'll tell you. Well, I mean, the philosophical difference that it drops you into AR. It drops you into the world that you're already in, where you're seeing your surroundings.
And that's pretty natural. High quality, because that's one thing with the Quest Pro. It's not. It's still an outline.
No, it's so the real world, instead of being in what Meta drops you in, a virtual world, right? Apple drops you in the real world. It is extremely high quality. I've seen some people say it's like reality. It's like, well, no, it's a lot soft. I mean, 4K is great, but it's not reality.
It's not reality.
Reality is the highest resolution of all.
No, and the Quest Pro has a pass-through mode, but it's not at all realistic. Right. It's just
no, Apple's is very, very good. And then so they want your, by default, your experiences are going to be in that augmented space. And then there's the little dial, little digital crown that you can turn to shut yourself off from the world, essentially. But that is, yeah, I mean, the 3D was good. The pass-through mode was very impressive. The immersive stuff, like the sports, I know Alex and I have been talking a lot about immersive sports on this thing, like that slam dunk and it's a fielding error at Fenway Park. were just... I wanted to reach out and pick up that baseball, but it was in play, so I would have gotten in trouble. It just really remarkable. But I'll tell you, the thing that impressed me maybe the most is the UI on it. That it feels like Apple's best UI people spent 5 years on this, because it felt like a natural extension of a lot of things we've learned from iOS and iPadOS, that the gestures seem very natural. The fact that their eye tracking is so good that they are we think about the size of touch targets on an iPad or an iPhone, because they got to be the size of your dumb meaty finger, right? Well, it turns out our vision is way more precise than that. And they're doing eye tracking and machine learning stuff to get it to be, they know where you're looking. And it's really uncanny. Once you get it, you look at the close box and you know, tap your fingers together and it's closed. That's it. You look at the move handle on the bottom of the window, and you pick up a window and you just move it somewhere and let it go, and it all happens. So, it doesn't have lag. Like, they built a really nice computer user interface. It's one of the reasons why I think they want to call this a spatial computer, is that they built a good computer UI for it that uses your gestures and your vision.
So there's no, the way it works with the Quest Pro is you have to kind of point at, and there's a little dot, and point at an icon, and you press and hold, and it looks. So you're saying, and are the icons fairly small? You can actually really tell that you're looking at that, not the one next to it.
I mean, the app icons aren't small, but the close box is quite small. It's a little circle, and when you look at it, it turns into an X.
Yeah.
It absolutely works. Yeah. There's no laser beam coming out of your pointer or anything like that. You literally, like,
just look at it.
I didn't do this, but a friend of mine, Mike Hurley, he took an image off of a web page and literally grabbed it and dragged it into another app, and it just worked. You know, he grabbed it, and it does start to feel tactile, like I'm literally moving this picture from place to place. So as a computer UI and the eye tracking stuff in it, it's very, very good. They did a great job.
You did this.
They spared no expense.
You did this sitting down, right?
Mostly.
So you were able to stand up.
There was a stand-up component. So at the end, they do this dinosaur thing where basically they draw a portal into the wall at the far end of the room. So since it's augmented reality, they're able to basically layer their 3D content onto a physical object. So it looks like a dinosaur is looking through a window in the room. And at that point, they said, why don't you get up and interact with a dinosaur? And so I walked over. And nice. And the frame, honestly, the frame rates were good. I walked too far, so I walked into the dinosaur. And then it was like, they're like, you know, step back, get out of the way of the dinosaur.
What happened when you walked into it?
I think it kind of grayed out, and it was basically saying you're occluding the object. Basically, I'll take that one. I was too energetic. No, but these are at the wall.
So, look, this is the thing that's most valuable, is you have a subjective experience of this. So that's what I'm interested in. What is it? What was your subjective experience with it?
And what I would say is that I think that the latency, like, it was, I don't think people are going to, I mean, somebody will, but I don't think people are going to get car sick with this thing, because the latency, the field of view was all very good. In fact, there was only one time in the entire demo where I could actually see the system struggling. And at the beginning of that dinosaur encounter, there's a butterfly that flies into the room, right? And they say, put your hand out, and it's supposed to land on your hand. And it did land on my hand. And then I moved my hand, like, you know, back and forth a little bit, and the butterfly lagged. Butterfly was a little bit behind, but it struck me that was the first time I'd had the illusion broken in the entire half hour. So, you know, again, they put there's a lot of money in this thing. There's a lot of hardware in this thing. And that's why I think that it's worth having those two conversations about, like, will people buy it versus, like, what is it as a tech accomplishment? Because they spent so much time and money and threw so many resources at that. And I'll tell you, that eye tracking, that moment where I realized that I need to stop looking for the cursor, because my looking was the cursor. that was when I went, oh, I see. And then the gestures are all, I mean, you bring two fingers together to tap, you bring two fingers together and move it left or right to swipe, you move them up and down to scroll. Like, it's all basically iOS gestures, really familiar. So yeah, as a 3D computer, they really built it's a remarkable user interface. I think they did a great job. Yeah.
I really wanted to ask you though about Mike's experience about drag and drop. Like, was the dragging part of it done with his eyes or with a gesture?
No, the dragging is with a gesture. Oh. In fact, my favorite thing was moving a window. That's the one that I keep thinking of a week later, is moving a window where I look down at the move line. It's like the little indicator at the bottom of an iPhone. And I looked at it and I grabbed it just by putting my two fingers together, at which point I could just move it wherever I wanted with my hand. But you use your hand. And then I actually, like, moved it to the right, and then I pushed it back a little bit further because I wanted it deeper into the room. And then you just let go and it stays there. It's like you moved it physically. So, you know, there are accessibility stories here. There is a vision only mode you can use if all you have is the ability to point your eyes because you've got motor issues. There is a version of that. They never showed Siri. But I have no doubt that you'll be able to use voice commands on this. They just didn't want to talk about Siri. I wonder why.
They mentioned that you could look at a text field and say a search, but they never showed you that.
I never did that. And there's also a keyboard you can interact. You can stick your hand on something and interact with it. You could probably stick it on Safari and like scroll it if you wanted to. It's just that I don't know if you'd want to for most things, because the way I try to describe it is, if we think about direct interaction with the iPhone, where you're putting your finger on the software essentially, and it's this, we don't need a cursor anymore, we've got direct interaction. This is like direct interaction at a distance. It's almost like you've got magic where you can just be like, oh yeah, scroll that. And you just move your hand and it scrolls it. You don't need to reach out and scroll it. You can just sort of like do it in your lap. And once you get used to the fact that you can just leave your hands down on your lap and you can still make all the gestures, because it knows, it's looking down there and it knows when you're making the gestures, that's all very effective. I mean, they threw a lot into this.
That's another thing that I think is going to be really interesting to find out about, like, the idea of having a completely virtual keyboard. Like, are they literally going to say, here is a completely fake one, we've projected on the surface? But the other thing is that, like, I'm sure that anybody who is actually going to want to be doing, like, real typing productivity is going going to want to have like, you know, a stock keyboard, but wouldn't it be great if like, if Apple, like you looked at it, I know exactly what that is. So, I'm going to give you a virtual one of you feel it, even though it's not really your vision.
It may not even be so. I think you're right. They actually said, especially in the context of using a Mac, that you could just use a keyboard and a trackpad and on the screen of the Mac, and it will work perfectly normally. And I think that that's what they'll do. I know Meta does this, I believe, with the Quest Pro, this idea that it has object detection. So I believe with the Quest Pro, and correct me if I'm wrong, Leo, but it detects when you've got a keyboard and it actually like does a breakthrough so you can see the keyboard in reality.
I have never tried that because the notion of productivity in those things.
I know, right? I have weird friends who have tried these things and have meetings in the Quest Pro.
I apologize. But, I should have.
But that tech is because they are already doing the person breakthrough where if you're in a completely immersive setting and somebody is looking at you and sort of leaning in, they appear through the mist. So that you can see them, which I think is admirable. The idea that if somebody wants to talk to you while you're using this thing, the system will show them to you and say, "Hey, Bob is over there." That's great. Yeah. But I think they could absolutely do that. And I would be surprised if they don't, that, if you're in an immersive environment, it would show you the keyboard. But I would also say there are probably layers of immersion where, you know, first off, maybe you're not in an immersive environment at all. You're in your regular room and you're seeing your keyboard, or maybe you're seeing sort of an immersive environment in front of you, but not all the way around. And when you look down, you see your keyboard. I think that Apple will absolutely do that sort of thing. So if you want to use a physical input device instead of reaching out and tapping on the virtual keys, which I am very skeptical of, I think that you'll be able to do that.
So it does, the more you talk about it and the more I read, the more I think that this is Apple. This is a concept car. This is Apple trying a lot of things.
Yeah.
And seeing what the reaction is.
Seeing what sticks.
Even
if they ship this concept car, I do feel like they're going to learn a lot.
I think they plan to ship it. Maybe not exactly as is, but they plan to ship it and are watching carefully. It sounds to me like the piece they really got right is spatial computing.
Yeah. Their UI stuff. That's the stuff I came away most impressed with, is this idea. And that's why, again, we were listing the reasons, the ways they wanted us, the takeaways they wanted from last week, right?
Right.
They wanted the takeaway to be the tech is impressive, they're humane. And I think the other one of the takeaways was, this is a computer, judge it as a computer, which is weird and interesting, but like, I get it. Having used it, I get it that they're like, that's a place they're comfortable. And the idea that they're trying to sell at least somewhat a productivity story to say, this basically, it runs iPhone apps, it runs iPad apps. If you look at your Mac, it pops up a 4K virtual window of your Mac and you can control it. And like, and they're good at computer interfaces, right? In a way, it's the metaphor that they understand the most. So of course they're leaning on it.
Go ahead.
All I was gonna say is that one of the things that was interesting, I'd spent a lot of the weekend watching WWDC sessions to kind of get my head around that. By the way, so much nicer to watch pre-recorded WWDC sessions than the ones on stage. I mean, the audio is better. The presentation's better. You can move through it at speed. So I think that a lot of the vision ones are really good. The interesting thing that I found was, number one is their concepts of the space. So you have windows, you have volumes, you have spaces. Like, and so they kind of define those for you. Okay, you're gonna have a bunch of windows, and this is how they work. Then they have these volumes that are the objects that you're going to be using, or things that you can move around, and then the space is the thing you're inside of. And it's just a really nice way to, and a lot of things all feed around those three concepts. But it showed was really, we think of it that way, but I've never seen anybody describe it with such clarity. You know, like for developers, like understanding this is how you're going to do these things. The other thing is that it's not just the fit and finish that they put on the end interface. It's the fit and finish of the developer tools. I mean, the developer tools are very well developed. And I mean, I used to help develop a Nodal compositor, and I've worked on lots and lots of Nodal systems. Nodal compositing, of course, is, you know, or Nodal systems are, you know, you have boxes and you tie them together with little noodles and you build things out. Well, Reality Composer Pro uses a Nodal compositing system Nodal system to drive it. It is the nicest Nodal system I've ever seen. And I know that seems like a really odd thing, But to go down to the developer tool and make it the most functional version of that concept that I've ever seen was kind of amazing to look at. And it was just, and so there are so many things about it, and the way that Reality Composer Pro works, the way that they're thinking about video, like video is, so many of these things are not big steps for the developers. If you're already an iOS developer, there's so much of this, and this is what's missing. I mean, I've developed apps for Oculus. It's not that way. Like it's not like the, you know, it is like building a it's like building a cabin in the forest being attacked by bears, you know? And so the thing is that you're constantly trying to figure this stuff out. And there's no native platform like this that's built for the developers to put those things together, which I thought, you know, they've really done that exceptionally well. The video stuff is just, it's just HLS. And oh, right, we built a whole new format. That's the one little glitch that we have right now, is the MVHEVC is their new video format. We were wrong last week, by the way, or I was wrong. It's not 83 frames a second. It's 90 frames a second. And it is 96 frames a second for film. And the reason they do that, of course, is so that they can equally show all the frames, and they're not doing some kind of weird
it's
round.
It's easy multiple of 24. Yeah.
3X, yeah, it's four times. And
I get an F in math. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah. So great frame rates. The funny thing about it for us that are doing live, I think a bunch of us are talking about, like, how do we do 90 frames a second? Like, there's no systems that do that, you know? And so it'll probably be 60 for a little while. But the point is that all these platforms, as I watched it, what I could see is that they don't make you learn something completely new. If you're already an Apple developer, you're just adding on little bits and pieces, and then they're doing those add-ons in a very, very clear way.
Did you watch the track on Unity? Because one of the things they said is, well, if you're not going to use our tools, you're going to have to use Unity.
Yeah, I think the misguided attack that Epic fired off has now shown itself, which is none of us knew whether they were going to keep on building their own stuff or whether they were going to Unity. Unity's a solid platform. Is it as good as Unreal? I don't think so. Not right now, but it now has a huge shot in the arm from Apple that it didn't have a week ago. And so it's not so much that Unity is going to take over Unreal or Epic's in any kind of trouble whatsoever. They've got a great platform. A lot of people are using it. It's just that it emboldens their chief competitor a lot and will flow a lot of money into what they're doing. And so it's not a huge mistake, but it's going to cost Epic billions, you know, as this goes forward. So
by the way, speaking of things Apple didn't talk about last week that they don't want us talking about in context with this product for the next 6 months, games is actually one of them. The only game context they talked about in the keynote was
Kojima.
You could play like an iPad game with a controller in a virtual, like what?
Yep.
But clearly there's the shared space that multiple apps can run in. There's the equivalent of full screen mode, which is apps can be all alone in an AR space. And then there's immersive. And of course you can play fully immersive games in this thing. There is a question about whether the hand tracking that Apple's doing is going to be so precise or whether you're going to have to buy an add-on controller for certain kinds of games. I'm sure it's Beat Saber. It's probably going to be able to do it or something like that. But like, it's absolutely going to do that. You can see it in the sessions that it's going to be able to do that. It's just not what Apple wanted to emphasize. I think that's kind of interesting that every other VR system has been talked about in the context of immersive gaming. And Apple's privately, they're like, yeah, it does that, but we're not talking about it right now. It's fascinating.
I want to get more of your subjective points of view, especially about the field of vision, things like that, field of view. We're going to take a little break. Jason Snell has tried it on, and we're talking about Vision Pro. Last week, Jason, just FYI, we debated whether anybody would buy this. And so we're not going to talk about that.
And I think the jury's out on that point, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Or even what this is, because I think there's a lot of things that could change in the next 6 to 8 months. But we'd at least know what they showed. And the other thing, and I had said this before the event, was we want to listen very carefully to how Apple positions it. So I want to go more into that. You started that conversation. I think that's really interesting. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. Would you ever forget to mute yourself on Zoom and then, I don't know, it's say or do something your coworkers probably don't want to hear? Yeah, you probably have. Using the internet without ExpressVPNs like that. You're out in the world and you forgot to mute. Yeah, sure, it's just a bit of harmless banter, but when the boss overhears, well, it could end badly. People need a VPN for several reasons, but a big one is to protect your privacy. Internet service providers, your carrier, your home ISP, they know exactly what you're doing, every website you visit, and they can sell completely legally that information to the data brokers, to ad companies, who then use your data to target you. It's happening all the time. It happens on your TV set. And we were talking over the weekend about what TV streamer to use. And the truth is that data that you're, you know, what shows you're watching for how long and when, and in many TV sets, because they have cameras, whether you're actually in the room, all of that gets sent back to the home office unless you're using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN routes your network traffic through a secure encrypted tunnel. When you do emerge, you emerge with an IP address that's associated with ExpressVPN, not you. So no one knows what you're up to. Of course, it protects your security when you're at open Wi-Fi access points. They can't use that Wi-Fi pineapple to attack you. It also lets you have, you know, you choose your geographic location because you appear on the internet wherever that ExpressVPN server is. And because they have servers all over the world, that can pretty much be anywhere. Easy to use, works on iOS, works on Mac, Android, Windows, Linux. You can buy a router from ExpressVPN. They actually have very good routers with ExpressVPN built in that protects your whole house. You can, yes, you can put it on your TV in many cases. I mean, it's really a powerful solution. Very easy to use. You fire it up, you click the button, and it will choose the fastest nearest server automatically. I should tell you, for your security and just to reassure you, ExpressVPN says in their privacy policy, we do no logging. They have that privacy policy vetted by an independent third party on a regular basis, but they go the extra mile. They've created this trusted server technology that runs in RAM, is sandbox, cannot write to the drive, and it's just for you. So when you open it, that's your server, that's your trusted server running in RAM. When you close it, it's gone with no trace of you left behind. And as if that weren't enough, they use a custom Debian distribution on all their servers that wipes the drive and starts over every reboot every single day. Again, all of that has been verified by independent third parties. It's fast because they invest in the network fast enough that you can watch HD streams from anywhere in the world. They're all over the world, as you see, 94 countries. CNET and TechRadar both rate ExpressVPN number one. It's the only one I use. It works everywhere. This is the way. Protect your online privacy by visiting expressvpn.com/MacBreak. ExpressVPN.com/MacBreak. When you do that, you'll get an extra 3 months with a 1-year package. Brings it down below $7 a month. And you do want to pay because they invest it back into the infrastructure, into speed, into rotating IP addresses, all the things you want from the best VPN there is, expressvpn.com/MacBreak. Try it today. And when you do, please use that address so they, you know, you saw it. They know that you saw it here. I even wonder, Jason, if Apple's thinking this form factor, we're not tied to this form factor, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm a firm believer. I know we've said this because we've been talking about this product before, like for 6 months or a year before we even knew what it was. One of the things that I really do believe is that Apple is playing a long game, an extremely long game here. And like this one, like you said, Leo, it's kind of the concept car they're going to put on sale, but it's going to sell in small numbers for a high price, but they're going to learn a lot. And I think that within Apple, you know, I just get the sense that they are going to do kind of what they did with the Apple Watch and say, we're going to learn how people use it and what people want and what turns people off and what expensive piece of hardware have we built into this thing anticipating that people would use it. And then it is not used and we can just dump it because we've reconceived of this. And then I would be very surprised if in 4 years or 5 years, the Vision OS category, whatever it looks like at Apple, doesn't look remarkably different than this, because this is the product of Apple internally. And remember, they don't do market research and stuff like that. It's Apple all in black boxes inside Cupertino, spending 5 years envisioning this product. And now it meets the real world. Now the fun begins, right? And I think that people, even people inside Apple who are like, I don't know about this feature, I'm not so sure. Pick your favorite, pick your least favorite feature, whether it's the eyesight or it's the digital persona or something else. And they're undoubtedly there were disagreements, right? And then this is where reality hits the product. And somebody inside Cupertino is going to be like, aha, I told you so. And things will change.
Yeah, this
and
is Apple's horse designed now by a committee. It really is. Andy, I can see you want to chime in.
I'm sorry. I think that's absolutely true. I think Jason was absolutely 100% correct that this is like, even with the iPhone as revolutionary as it was, they had to deal with the fact that, okay, we know how to make this thing fail hard. Let's not do any of those things. Whereas this is, there is no market for this. We are really free to decide an absolutely optimal product because, I'm sort of disappointed by a lot of the conversation about saying, oh yeah, but that's, they said that the iPhone would never sell. They never said, okay, well, what people need to understand is that, at the time, in the months before the iPhone launched, there had been 830 million cell phones sold in history. Right. Whereas today there are only 65 million users of AR, not just like people who have bought these, just people that are considered by market analysts to have used it. That means that, as we've been saying all along, we don't know exactly what people are going to use this for. But that if Apple is the one of those few companies that has the ability to treat this like an opportunity that says, look, we can basically do the chess move where we keep our finger on the piece. See, we haven't gone yet. We haven't moved yet. This doesn't count because they know they have 5 years to really figure out like what our people are even marginally interested in buying.
So do they really have 5 years? I know they can afford, they have the runway, but will the public give them 5 years?
I think so. Right. I mean, again, if it's a long, I think that it's been demonstrated that there's definitely a market for this within the realm of researchers, within the realm of people who are doing, who are vertical industries that do a lot of training, medicine, a lot of these categories.
Remember though, Apple's a publicly held company. If this sells below expectations next year,
they make so much money that shareholders will give them all the latitude they want. And they're believers. The shareholders are generally believers who are like, we believe that Apple is really going down a new path here. Plus, they're still throwing off profits everywhere else. So they're going to give them all the rope they need for this. But, you know, Andy, I agree with Andy. I think also that some markets will present itself fairly quickly. I've already heard from several people who went through that demo experience like me who said, they think that 3D movies and immersive video at sporting events and concerts and things like that will sell headsets on its own. Plus, you talk about
Wait a minute, like you go to an event and wear it, or people will wear it at home?
No, you wear it at home and you're there and you're completely immersed, like a sporting event or a concert. And then also the travel, like Road Warrior kind of thing, where you're like, you're in hotels and you can bring, you've essentially got an iPad with you with a giant screen. And if you open up a Mac, now the Mac is controlling it too. You can have multiple windows up and all of those things. Like, will somebody want to work 8 hours on this thing? I don't know. I mean,
how long did you get to wear it? You were half an hour. And did you feel fatigued
worse
in any way?
No, it hurt from the beginning till the end. But that was just, like I said, I kept adjusting it and it just was
show titled. It hurt from the beginning to the end.
So it didn't get worse. I think that's a positive that it didn't get worse, but I did not have a good fit. Anyway, I think there will be some markets that we will be surprised by where somebody will be like, well, wait a second. I'll just buy it to watch those movies. Or that
Taylor Swift fans will easily spend $3,500 for a good seat at the concert.
This was a conversation that I had with some people last week, which is there's probably a price between watching it on TV and buying a Taylor Swift ticket.
Right.
That gets you the immersive Taylor Swift concert experience after the fact.
How was the sound? Was the sound good?
It's a lot like the Quest. It sounds good, but it's speakers right over your ears. Yeah. So if you were really wanting to block out the world or have the best sound, you would pair it with some AirPods. But yes, you can. Okay. But philosophically, again, what Apple wanted to show is you're hearing the world around you and you're seeing the world around you.
Yeah, they didn't want to isolate
you're hearing
you.
Right. They want to have both of those things going in there. But you totally can do that and put in some AirPods and have it be noise canceling and completely immersive that way, too. Sure.
Yeah, and I think it's probably going to be a version of this that is the form factor that we see now for quite some time. And it's going, there'll be other versions that are lighter, other versions that are less expensive that'll all come out. But this is the pro version. This is like the cheese grater. And this is going to continue to be there because they're not going to be able, they're just going to keep increasing their performance. They're going to probably get a little lighter. I'm guessing that within two or three versions, you'll see it be 25% lighter, but not significantly less. And then there'll be a light version. There'll be an AVAR version. There might be, you know, all these other things that they've done with everything else that they do. But there is I think there's people who are going to want to have the higher performance. I mean, this is good performance. It's not incredible performance for a headset. It's the best performance in a publicly available headset, but getting to 6 to 8K per eye, 120 frames per second is going to be probably within two versions of this. And at that point, it's pretty compelling. And the people who use that one aren't going to want to use the little ones. So I don't think that, and I think that what Apple did that the other companies haven't done is take away the cost constraint. There were so many conversations related to these headsets of how do we make it $300 or $500 or $1,500 or whatever it is. And they take things out, and they also aren't chip designers. So they weren't able to, do it at the level that Apple was doing it at. And so I don't think Apple has to go crazy. And this one, I think, is still going to sell. Again, next year they'll sell as many as they can make. I don't think that is very high.
Andy, you had a story on that Sony said, what did they say about the screens?
They said, I think I found the original article, but they basically, there was an analyst that was saying that Sony will probably not, the number of screens they will be able to ship in any one year is in the hundreds of thousands, not close to the million. So that will be probably the big limiter on how many of these they can sell.
Yeah, 900,000 a year, according to Display Daily. And so that's if Apple bought every single one, that's 450,000 a year at this point. And honestly,
100,000 to 200,000.
This story is also from the Elec that Apple asked them to be able to make more, and Sony said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, Apple gets what it wants eventually, but this is one of those things where how do you create a market for a display like this? Well, one, you do this, you make a product that requires it, and you go from there. And Apple and Sony will either be good partners, or Apple, it wouldn't surprise me if we're reading that story that Apple has already got a different partner for a future version. And Apple is not likely to be denied, but because they've got all the money, and they'll find a way. But yeah, I would imagine this thing is going to be supply constrained. Honestly, that may be one of the reasons it costs what it does. Not just that it's made out of extremely expensive components, but because if they know how many they're going to be able to get, you should price it so you limit demand, right? Because you can't sell. Well, they could price it for 2,000, and that would be great, and they can sell 2 million of them, but they can't make 2 million of them. So why would you price it that way?
Yeah, exactly. I think that they would sell exactly the same number next year at 3,500 or at 1,000, because at 3,500 they're still going to max out the number that they can make. And so, to your point, I think that was a better situation for them, and I think it also gives them some cover. Like, hey, we're selling them as fast as we can make them.
Oh yeah, analyst call, right? We sold out.
We're doing the best we can. It's a new vertical, and we're still working out some of the kinks, but we're selling every one that we make. And that's, for an analyst call, that's pretty good signal.
It's expected they'll make 100,000. Sony says we can make 800,000 screens a year. That's 400,000 devices at max a year if they buy all of Sony's supply. 50,000 to 100,000, 50,000 to 100,000 devices per quarter, according to the Elec.
Right. Yeah.
So 100,000 is not an unreasonable amount. It's not enough to move the needle. I mean, this really is a developer tool.
That's when Andy mentioned Pro. One of the pros that are going to be using this product, Andy and Alex both touched on it. It's developers, right? Like one of the things that's happened, and I know David Smith, who's an iOS developer, wrote a really nice essay this week about why he's very excited about developing for this platform. It is, if this is going to be big eventually, one of the things that Apple has as an advantage is the App Store and its app developers and people who are familiar with its platforms developing software for it. And I would imagine that a lot of the sales of this thing, there will be a developer edition. Apparently, this is something that's come out, that there will be a developer kit that will be available to approved.
They'll need to do that because they want to reserve a certain number and make sure developers get them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so they are going to ship some of these hardware, whether it's the final or a semi-final version. I think that later this year, developers will be able to ask Apple and they'll look at their track record and then they'll approve them individually and someone will come to the house and who knows how that will work.
So Halide will get one. That will happen. What you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And David, I think David Smith will get one, right, for his. Yeah. Now that he's written that essay and he's proven himself with WidgetSmith and a bunch of other his popular apps, I think he will do it. But that's the other role this product plays is it is going to get this in the hands of developers to write the software.
And now's the time to stop complaining about the store and start saying how great Apple is if you want to get your dev.
It'll be a year or two before they complain about the Vision OS App Store and what the rules are right?
And the interesting thing is that it is, for developers, it's pretty green field because you're going to have a bunch of people who, let's say tens or hundreds of thousands of people who had the money to buy a $3,500 headset and will buy most of the apps that are developed for
That's true.
Just to see what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, like they're just going to be doing research. They just want to see what's going on. They want to see the next thing. And so for a developer, you know, to push into that market, the risk is actually lower than it seems just because you have people with money that are ready to spend money and need and want to know if there are other developers, if they're going to want to see how everybody's doing everything.
You can almost guarantee you'll sell 50,000 units for sure of anything
If you write it reasonably well, if you follow the guidelines and
if everybody isn't,
you're pretty good.
Now, so I guess really I've been saying the wrong thing and asking the wrong question. It's not really what the public reception for this is at all.
Not yet.
It's how much Apple's willing, how long Apple's willing to go, how many years, how many versions are they willing to develop?
Absolutely.
To get it to the point where people do want it.
I think they're $50 billion in.
I'm sure you're right. We know that Meta spends $10 billion a year on its...
I think that Apple spent a lot of money on this. I think that they're in... that's the one thing that we see. I think that...
But I think they'll spend another $50 billion in marketing over the next couple of years. Probably. I mean, they're going to spend some... Yeah. You're going to see a lot of ads for this.
Yeah, they're...
They need to create a new market.
What's interesting is that it's not... It's a computing platform. To them, it's the next computing platform.
Right.
You know, it's another place to be to do your work. And I think that, and, you know, do work, do everything you're doing. You know, it's not a place to play games or a place to disappear. You're going to, you know,
it's a computer.
And so I think that they're looking at that as a, you know, and if you look back at the 1.2 million iPhones that were sold, that was a, you know, good start.
Right.
compared to what they do now.
Leo, I think it would take a complete rejection of the product, right? Like if they can't find a market for it, if everybody, like nobody buys it and everybody looks at it and says, this isn't good for watching sports. It isn't good for watching movies. It isn't good for doing video conference. Like if there is a complete utter rejection of it, that people just like all their assumptions were wrong. I could see a scenario where they walk away in a few years, but I think it feels to me like it's going to take years to even find out if that's true. So after doing 7 years of work on this, they're not going to walk away in the short run.
I think it's going to take
an extended belly flop for them to get there. And honestly, I think it might take so long because I really do believe that in the back of their minds, what they're thinking is eventually we're going to get glasses people can wear out in the world that augment reality. And that's the prize at the end of this.
It's kind of like waiting
for 10 years,
nuclear
we'll
fusion. And, it's
30 years
someday,
away. Around the corner.
Someday you will.
It's going to be big when it happens, though.
I wonder if the other thing that might happen is that if the vision transmogrifies. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that there isn't really a market for a computer you strap to your face, that's really not the form factor anybody wants. So I'm wondering, though, maybe spatial computing could be expressed in some other form. Maybe you could project screens without wearing them, and I could still use the gestures and the eye track. There might be other forms that you could do without having this strapped to your face, and maybe it's just me because I just have a visceral reaction every time I do this. I just don't like it.
I had a conversation last week with somebody who said the exact same thing, Leo, the idea that what if this tech has other ramifications that we haven't really talked about? Like, I'll just throw one out there. What if you had a big screen in front of your Mac?
Exactly.
And it had a sensor display on it and that you were able to actually like move the windows and gesture and scroll and do all sorts of stuff with your hands instead of using a trackpad. That would be interesting, right? And like they have the technology to do that.
They bought the company that does that.
Yeah.
What was the name of that thing? They had, I had it. I still have it somewhere. A little brick you'd put in front of your computer and you could gesture with it. And then they bought the company. So they own this technology.
Or
a Tom Cruise in Minority Report where he's going like this and he's got the screens. You know, I think it's just as likely.
Hand gestures are a lot easier than those.
Yeah, they're better than that, right? They're better than, they're much more subtle. You know, you're down here going, I really think that there is a market. That is something that people would want. I think Apple, I hope that person you were talking to was really a smart, savvy person.
It was.
Okay.
Only smart and savvy people were allowed in.
Because I really think that that's how Apple's thinking also is we want to test some technologies in space. I note that they say spatial computing a lot. I think that that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence on that term. It's like, I don't know how much this is. I'm very, very impressed with, especially after watching all the videos from Developer Week about how well they've thought out the idea of what does an interface that exists in three dimensions look like. I've seen this from Apple in a way that I haven't seen from any other maker. Nonetheless, Apple, they are the king of spin. They are the kings of managing perception. And I'm trying to figure out if they're just trying to bamboozle people into thinking that no, we're not competing with anybody because they're just doing virtual screens. We're doing an entirely new paradigm for computing. And you don't want to be fooled. You don't want to be a boob.
Mark Zuckerberg doesn't think they're competing. He says the Vision Pro, he told this at an all hands meeting, The Verge got the text of it. It could be the vision of the future of computing, but like, it's not the one that I want.
You know, I mean, you're Mark Zuckerberg, sorry. And you're talking to your employees and you don't want them to be sad because Apple is blowing another one.
Apple, seriously.
Although his vision, he said, we're all about connecting people. I'm like, really? Also, and Facebook's like, we have values. And I'm like, really? Facebook, you have values? And you're about connecting people. I mean, Apple's whole presentation was actually about being present in the world and not cutting yourself off by default. But what Mark Zuckerberg means is we think that you should, you know, be little emoji teeter-totter action figures in a virtual meeting somewhere in a virtual office. And
here's the quote. Zuckerberg said the Quest is about, quote, people interacting in new ways and feeling closer, the Quest, while also being active and doing things. By contrast, every demo Apple showed was a person sitting on a couch by themselves.
True.
I mean, that could be a vision of the future of computing, but like, it's not the one that I want, is that lonely computing.
I would be shocked if there isn't fitness and people moving around in this product by the time it launches.
The only thing I thought when people talk about fitness, I was just like, if I buy a $3,500 headset, I don't want to get sweaty. I immediately was like
the sweat shield.
Sorry. We saw the red dot on the side of this thing. So congratulations. We'll sell you a new display panel for $2,800.
Well, to that point, he says, from what I've seen initially, I'd say the good news is there's no kind of magical solution that they have to any of the constraints on the laws of physics that our teams haven't already explored and thought of. They went with a higher resolution.
Laws of physics.
Can't break them. They went with a higher resolution display, and between that and all the technology they put in there to power it, it costs 7 times more.
And now our low-end product that we just pre-announced.
Our cheap product. And now requires so much energy you need a battery and a wire attached to it to use it. They made that design trade-off, and it might make sense for the cases they're going for. But look, I think that their announcement really showcases the difference in the values and the vision that our companies bring to this.
Values.
You know, that's fine, though. I mean, you should compete if this category is going to succeed.
And he's trying to pump up his employees. I totally get it. I just, from the outside, I roll my eyes at like Facebook's values, right? That's so rich. And he compares it to the hastily pre-announced Quest 3 rather than their pro product, which was originally $1,500, which is, I'll grant you half. I will say my friend Mike Hurley, who I do a podcast with every week, he tried it. He also owns a Quest Pro and has used it extensively, including in meetings. And he said, you know, it's not just 2 or 3 times better than the Quest Pro. It's like 10 times better than the Quest Pro.
Well, it has to be. That's the old story is that I can't remember who it was. Some management consultant said if a new product isn't 10 times better than an existing product, it's going to disappear. It has to be an order of magnitude better to make people make the move.
The issue is also is that when you talk about your employees, one of the reasons you got to keep on pumping up your employees is that employees, you know, it doesn't really matter how many headsets they work on. It's how cool the project is, especially for programmers and developers.
Don't leave.
And I guarantee that everybody at Meta working on Oculus is looking at the schedule on their stock options. like they're just looking at like, am I in year three or am I in year four? Am I in year one? When is the, you know, what's the quarterly, you know, because, you know, Apple's going to, as this starts to turn, Apple's going to turn into a huge Hoover machine looking for the best developers, and they're going to start poaching everybody.
You know, there's another angle on it, which is that arguably Meta's vision has failed, that this is not a success. Yeah. And I don't think it is. And I bought them, and I bought the first Oculus Rift, the one that was on the Kickstarter. I bought pretty much all of them.
This is very much a Facebook sort of perspective where they're not a hardware company. Their hardware exists to get you into using their service. So their perspective is going to be, let's make this as affordable as possible so that as many people can get these as they can. So that once they get, once they learn that, oh, I've got all my core friends are basically getting together in this Facebook VR sort of thing, Meta VR. Hey, I want to get on that too. So we're doing it collectively, not just the people in this conversation, but we're doing this reaction, which is a very American thing where there's a winner and then everyone else are losers. It's going to be very, very possible that it could be just like the phone market where there's the iPhone and then there are people for whom the iPhone is and other $1,000 smartphones are dramatic overkill for what they want to do with it. And they're going to be the ones who buy the $400, $500 headsets because they just want a game or they just want to have these entertainment experiences. So there could be a lot of different interpretations of this. This is why the next 5 years are going to be so interesting.
Well, and it's so important for Apple for that to exist, because that is what's kept Apple out of an enormous amount of trouble up until now is Android. Android has been a gift to Apple, even though Steve Jobs took it really badly. Android is a huge gift to Apple because it really blunts a lot of the antitrust stuff, because there is another market that is actually bigger than Apple's market. And so I think that it is it's very important for Apple for those others to succeed, for Facebook and others to, or Meta and others to succeed. I think that it is, but I do think that it's going to be something like, you know, the hard part is that this is a real contrast between move fast and break things and fit and finish. and I think that, you know, and I think Apple couldn't come out with anything less than high fit and finish. Absolutely. when they did this. They had to do the Apple version of this, and they couldn't put something out early. That said, they had to put something out eventually because, you know, no plan ever survives meeting reality. You know, and so they could do as much as they could and show that they can do something great, but they have to have people interact with it, have them see it. I don't think that they need more than a couple hundred thousand people to buy it for the first couple of years. I don't think this is, I definitely don't think this is the product that they envisioned when they, 7 years ago when they started it. I think this is the product that they knew they could get to probably five years ago.
I think the essential thing was making sure they got developers on board as quickly as possible. And that wasn't just getting the hardware out. That's showing off what they did last week, which is just, my goodness. I mean, I've written just a handful of Swift apps, but it got me and just basically test apps just to get used to like writing iPad apps and thinking that, I mean, I was watching videos thinking that, gee, I don't think it would take me more than a day to adapt like the three apps that I built like for VR, and not just this lame, oh, instead of having an iPad app, now you've got the ornaments that are hanging from the bottom. Like, no, I could see how, well, if I wanted to actually add this feature that I thought was kind of interesting, I don't think it would take very long because I already know the Swift. I already know this app. This app is already running on iPad, and they seem to have outlined very, very easily how the skills that I already have are easily transferable to basically enhancing these things. That was part of the most powerful part of last week's announcements, was just simply convincing even people like me that who are not professional developers that, hey, look, creating really good VR apps is accessible to you and get you excited about doing it.
Well, let's pause for a moment. We're going to talk some more. Jason Snell has tried it. He is here to tell. I didn't ask about the field of vision. We'll get to the field of view in just a second. He's going to tell us more about that. We should really talk about the Mac Pro. I'm waiting for my 15-inch MacBook Air to arrive any minute now. You know,
yeah, Jason, how uncomfortable was the Mac Pro to wear?
You know, I chose to wear the Mac Studio instead because it's a lot lighter and it's the same processor. So, you know,
the code name for that was Flavor Flav, I believe.
It hurt from start to finish.
Really, right. Should be the show title.
Actually, it was kind of comfortable. You wear it like a shirt. It's fine. Yeah.
Andy Anatko, Alex Lindsay, more to come on Mac Break Weekly. I was hoping that the laptop would be delivered before the show was over. It looks like now UPS is saying it's going to come between 2 and 5 tonight. So if you want to run over to my porch and steal it, that's your window of opportunity. go on over and there goes John Ashley. We lost him. Our show today. Oh, I hope you had a good lunch. Because what I'm about to do is going to make you very, very hungry. Our show today brought to you by HelloFresh. Oh, man, I love our HelloFresh box. It takes the work out of eating well. You can reach your goals. They have a variety of choices, like their calorie smart and protein smart lunch and dinner options. They've got new vegan recipes, too, which is awesome. What I like about HelloFresh is the quality of the ingredients, farm-to-table quality. It's funny. I'm now disappointed when I go to the grocery store. I said, but that pepper isn't as nice as the HelloFresh pepper was. Those snap peas don't snap. HelloFresh's seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from the farm to your doorstep in less than 7 days. And I think that's probably as fresh as you're going to get anywhere. Fresh flavor in every bite. They look beautiful. They taste amazing. And you get the recipe right there. Figuring out what's for dinner is not at the top of anyone's summer activity wish list. You might say, gosh, I wish dinner were ready. I'd like to eat outside today. Well, HelloFresh delivers mouthwatering, chef-crafted recipes, and fresh ingredients to your door. You don't have to shop for them. You can whip them up very quickly and then spend your summer living. Doing whatever you want. HelloFresh Market has this. So you can get the meals, right? With the recipe card and all the ingredients, just the right amount so that you have everything you need, nothing more, nothing less to make an amazing meal. We got the meal for 4 versions so we could have leftovers because they're really great leftovers. HelloFresh Market has now snacks, meals, and more to add onto your weekly order, like their fun s'mores bundle for the kids. You know, you don't need to go shopping to get everything you need for s'mores tonight. Let's have s'mores tonight, kids. Make entertaining easy with a selection of crowd-pleasing eats. Their bratwurst bar, with caramelized onions, Dijonnaise slaw, and pineapple relish. I told you you'd be hungry. Or the snack board with pretzel bites, spiced bar nuts, and hot honey peach jam. It just makes entertaining so easy when you know you have everything you need. And if you need dinner ready like now, look for quick and easy recipes on the HelloFresh menu, including fast and fresh options, less than 15 minutes. Whip them up, and they taste like you've been cooking all day. They're so delicious. HelloFresh is more convenient than grocery shopping. I want to say it's cheaper, too. You might say, well, that's a luxury I'm going to have to pay for. No, it's about 25% less expensive than takeout. No matter your lifestyle, you'll always find delicious recipes in the HelloFresh menu. Take a bite out of something new with 40 recipes to choose from every single week. You can even swap proteins and sides to make a recipe just how you like it. They give you all the options right there. HelloFresh. We love our HelloFresh box. I look forward to it when it arrives. America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh.com/MacBreak16. Use the code MacBreak16 for 16 free meals, including free shipping. Okay, now really, at least try this. HelloFresh.com/MacBreak16 and use the code MacBreak16 to get 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's a good deal. And my mouth. I want to do the bratwurst bar. Caramelized onions, Dijonnaise slaw, pineapple relish. Yeah, baby. HelloFresh.com/MacBreak16. And the offer code is MacBreak16. Thank you, HelloFresh, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. So Apple, it wasn't all Vision Pro all the time. When we were there, though, Jason, are you sitting through the computer announcements thinking, we were sitting here thinking, are they going to, it was almost, what, an hour and a half in? Are they gonna do the Vision Pro or whatever they're gonna call it? We didn't know the name at the point.
I think the fact that they announced a new MacBook Air, lowered the price on their most popular computer, introduced a new Apple Silicon chip, updated the Mac Studio, and finally ended the Apple Silicon transition with the new Apple Silicon Mac Pro, and they did that in 13 minutes. I thought, oh yeah, there's going to be a headset.
Yeah, because they moved through it pretty quick. But still, I mean, that, you know, it's minutes, in a way, it's a shame because that was a, they really did a lot of stuff just independent of the Vision Pro.
I agree. I mean, not only do we get the map for like the future of their operating systems for the next year, which is always a big news, but yeah, the Mac announcements, which didn't, and they weren't necessary. They just had them ready to go. So I guess they fired them off in 13 minutes. But like, they're not, like I said, like this is the first appearance of the M2 Ultra. They finally closed the transition by doing a Mac Pro. They brought back the Mac Studio for M2, which was an open question about whether that product was going to get updated for M2. And then I think the most important things they did is they took their most popular product on the Mac side, the MacBook Air M2, and they cut the price by $100, which I did not have on my bingo card, and did that 15-inch laptop that we've been discussing that's been in the works for a while now. And Mark Gurman from Bloomberg reported over the weekend that they had originally planned on that to come out last summer, and they basically delayed it until now. They wanted to ship it with the 13, and next time they revise these, they'll probably ship together. But like that 15-inch laptop, yeah, it used to cost like $1,200 to get a laptop over 15 inches on the Mac side, because you had to get a MacBook Pro, and most people do not need all the features of a MacBook Pro. And now for $200 more, and it's actually $100 if they're configured the same way, because that $1,099 MacBook Air is like, it's got two fewer GPUs and it's got the low power power brick, and like it is not like it is decontented, as the car people say. So it's really like $100 price delta to get the bigger screen. I honestly think that's the biggest impact news of the whole week in terms of like immediate real impact, is that Apple's best-selling Mac is $100 cheaper and now there's a 15-inch option. Like, that's huge. It's huge.
Yeah, and in some ways it tells you how committed they are to Vision Pro, that they were willing to dilute what is really a big story in order to get the Vision Pro out.
It's a big story, but it's not a new story. You know, like, I think a lot of times we go into WWC looking for something new, and this would have been like, yeah, it's great. But they're not.
I have to tell you,
they want to launch something.
People on the Windows side, people on the PC side are looking at that 15-inch MacBook Air, 3.3 pounds. They're thinking, oh my God, you know.
You know. Did you notice, Leo, in the keynote that they kept talking about switchers and it works with your iPhone?
A lot of Intel.
I thought it was very clear message on the 15-inch MacBook Air that they think that there are PC laptop users who they can get with.
I don't think I'm misquoting Paul Thurrott when he said this is, again, going to be the best computer for running Windows. It'll have to be Windows on ARM, but it runs pretty well on my 13-inch MacBook Air. I think it'll run just fine on the 15. There is nothing there.
I mean,
this is big. And the PC market, by the way, including the Macs, has been going down after COVID by significant amounts. And it's hurt HP. It's hurt Intel. It's hurt Dell. So offering a laptop that makes people's mouth water is probably,
I don't know if it's just a laptop either. I mean, you're talking about a group of computers. Apple is no longer making something that's $60,000, or no longer really making that part of what they're doing. But you're looking at a group of computers that the value for except for some specific verticals, for most people, the money you pay for the power that you get, is very high.
I think this is a computer
very hard
want.
To reproduce on a PC, and that's from $12,000 all the way down to $600.
Right.
There is an incredibly great value for desktop. There's an incredibly great value for mobile. So I think that they're really making that environment difficult for a lot of PC manufacturers.
I love the Mac Studio too.
Me too.
Mean, in terms of value, the power of the low end model, which is it's the Max chip, for $2,000. Like, I bought one last year, an M1 model, and like, I love it, and it's very powerful. But the power price combination, I think, was reasonable. And that Ultra, I think the beauty of the M2 Ultra Mac Studio really is that it's exactly the same speed as the Mac Pro. Like, you don't have to buy a Mac Pro and spend that kind of money in order to get the fastest Mac that Apple makes, which I think is awesome. And then if you need the expansion and the extra IO, like, you can buy a Mac Pro, and people will, some people who have lots of PCI cards they need to put in it. But like everybody else, like, you just don't need it. You could just get the Mac Studio and you've got all that CPU and GPU power just the same. It's literally, because I talked to them about this when I was down there, it's literally identical in terms of performance. And they are not, there's nothing in the Mac Pro, because they both have enough cooling that they run unconstrained. There is nothing in the Mac Pro that makes it go faster. It's all just about ports and slots.
I love that too. And I love the fact that, they're just saying, hey, if you need the PCI, like, I'm a person that is probably going to get one because I need the PCI, you know, slots, and I need more of the Thunderbolts. But if you need 8 lanes of Thunderbolt, you need a bunch of cards for a little bit more money, you can buy that. But otherwise, it's the same. And I think maybe they learned that a little bit. I think we're seeing that with the phone as well, where they're not like holding back features from the smaller version of it. You know, you can get a big version or a small version, but they're both largely the same. And I think that's the right direction. If you want those extra features, you can pay a little bit more for them. And there will be people who need them. I mean, we have just stacks and stacks of the Sonnet boxes because I don't have anywhere to put a cart.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to those carts.
So that's interesting that the Mac Pro is no more performant than the M2 Ultra Mac Studio with a 24 core CPU, 76 core GPU, 30, but it is $1,000 more for the slots, basically.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you got, and then there's some extra ports too, because there's obviously there's more that the Ultra is capable than is on the Mac Studio's port grid. But yeah, basically performance wise, look, what we've learned with Apple Silicon is that a chip is a chip is a chip. I keep saying, like, literally an M2 in the 15 inch Air, the 13 inch Air, the iPad Pro, the Mac Mini is the same. They're all exactly the same in terms of performance. Essentially,
I honestly think that's
like, it's a chip is a chip.
That's a selling point, because you look at the AMD and the Intel product grid. It's baffling. It's crazy. There's low power for mobile. There's high power for desktop. There's all sorts of, you know, weird features. And it's confusing, I think, for normal consumers. Maybe gamers and pro users can figure out what they want, but it really is straightforward with a Mac. It's like, yeah, here's your choice. I don't feel like my M1 Studio is slow, though. I have no desire to upgrade at this point.
No, I did. So I did a review of both these systems, which is funny because there's not a lot to say. There's really, it's other than the M2 Ultra, which is a new chip, everything else we've seen before. But it's also the same story going from M1 to M2, which is it's incrementally faster, and that's great. But the audience for it is people who are still back on Intel,
right,
or who maybe want to change chip classes. If you've got an M1 of anything, you don't really need the M2 unless, like, MacBook Air, at least the physical characteristics change, but the Mac Studio, all it is a slightly faster chip. So the people who should buy the Mac Studio are people who are on Intel or who bought a laptop like a MacBook Pro, but spend most of it attached to a display, and maybe a Studio would be better. Or maybe they got a Mac Mini and they're like, maybe I'll go with a little more power and get the Mac Studio. But like M1 to M2, fundamentally, you know, it's only this incremental update.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for the M3. I'll upgrade to an M3. Totally. Are they on a yearly cadence now? Are they going to kind of get this all in order? And
I mean, M2 debuted here last year and there was no M3, right? So I think we'll see. Mark Gurman says that the next Air isn't going to come until early next year. So it may really be more of like an 18-month cadence for the chip generations. We'll see.
Yeah. Alex, the Pro is cute. It's a little smaller, right, Jason? It's not, it's hard to tell, but it looked like it was.
No.
It's not identical. Smaller.
It's literally the same enclosure. In fact, I mean, the motherboard and everything has obviously changed, but like the fans and the metal enclosure and the wheels on the bottom, if you buy those,
well,
like,
yeah, it's still all the $400.
Same. A lot less expensive.
Yeah. So for you, just because of the slots, a Pro makes sense.
Yeah,
the slots
are. Yeah, I mean, you know, being able to put a lot of IO in there is definitely things. That's something that I do. So we use cards with what we're doing a lot. So being able to put in, you know, I can, you know, we have when we want key fill outputs, we want to get a whole bunch of, like, for instance, for Zoom ISO, we can take, you know, in the current situation, we can do it with the little ones, but it's nice to have a box that you could slide in that, I can have a bunch of storage. I can have a bunch more RAM. I could also output, you know, 16 zoom ISOs, or maybe even eventually 32, you know, if I was feeding those into some kind of, you know, display system, you know, so I think that there's a lot of opportunity, you know, for that to expand a lot. So I think that it's going to be, you know, we were already talking about the fact that not the bandwidth wouldn't allow us to do this with zoom ISO, but at some point it'd be great to be able to push, you know, 48 outputs of zoom ISO, which may seem like a crazy thing to do, but if you're doing an event, like a hybrid event, you want to put a whole bunch of people on the screen. Having right now, what that was is an army of small laptops with Sonnet boxes, you know, that were all, and people have done this. Having one computer with just a bunch of SDI coming out of the back of it would be, you know, super useful. And so that would, you know, so there'll be people who buy it just for that kind of thing.
So the new Mac Pro is designed in California, is a product of Thailand, with final assembly in the U.S. So the Austin facility, the Texas facility, is still going to do final assembly. I don't understand why they say it's a product of Thailand. Does that mean everything's made in Thailand and they just screw it together in Austin?
I think that's probably part of the agreement they made with the government. Yeah. And whatever benefits they needed to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some legal definition.
They're going to do as little as possible in Austin, Texas.
I think there's some legal stuff about what percentage of the parts are created and what you call it.
Right.
You know, so I think
product of Thailand may assembled in the U.S. Okay, just so you know. I mean, who cares? Not China, though, which is, I guess, Apple cares.
And that's going to keep on going. I don't think Apple's going to keep on building on. I mean, they're still building a lot of their core in China because they have no choice, but right. I don't think they're going
to
keep
They'd on love to get rid of,
further developing.
Get rid of that, yeah. What about the iMac? Why did we not see an updated iMac? Did you ask anybody, Jason? Is the iMac dead? Do you want us just to buy a Mac Studio and a monitor?
You know, I was in a briefing where somebody asked that question, and they basically said a non-answer because they can't talk about future products, but they were very supportive of the iMac. I think based on Mark Gurman's reporting on this, that the truth is that they just decided that the M1 iMac was good enough and that they had other products they needed to build and that they would come back to it with M3. So I think I'm 100% confident that there will be an M3 iMac and that
with
will
a
be
bigger
the
screen.
I don't know about that. I think they're very happy with that. And now that they've got the studio display, do they need a 27-inch iMac? And I've heard that there's a debate inside Apple about that. Mark Gurman has reported that they've talked about building a larger one, but it was not a priority. And given that the 24-inch model wasn't a priority enough that it didn't make it to M2, I would be surprised if there were a bigger iMac than the 24.
Yeah, they probably have done research or whatever it is Apple does instead of market research and found that the audience for the iMac, the home audience, is really happy with 24. They don't want a bigger screen.
Or the MacBook Air. So,
Yeah, exactly. 15. Yeah, because so Lisa has that, you know, the probably a 5K iMac, the 27-inch, and it's kind of on its last legs. I guess I wouldn't replace it. She says, I want another iMac. I said, honey, it's 24 inches. I think screen real estate's important to her. So I guess she's really going to be a Mac Mini with a bigger screen.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And it's fine. Who should get a Mac Mini versus a Studio? Is there a clear demarcation there?
I think there is. I mean, the beauty of those two models is they encompass Apple's entire chip range. So it's M2, M2 Pro, M2 Max, and M2 Ultra. And the truth is, you know, it's going to be what's it worth to you to have performance, but that is a pretty nice rising amount of power based on what you want, power, memory, you know, right. CPU, graphics, all of those things. And then the price goes up as you go up there. So I think there's something for everybody there. I've talked to people for whom base Mac Mini is all they need. I've talked to people who are like, no, that Mac, the M2 Pro is like the sweet spot. It's like, it's a Mac Mini, but it's got more power. And it does. It's nice. It's basically an M2 Max chip with some of the cores turned off, basically. Right. So it's pretty powerful. For me, because I do a lot of podcasts and video where I'm doing like denoising and video encoding and stuff like that, for me, the Max was the choice that I thought was like the best fit for me. And if you're a really high-end user that has high-end needs, that Ultra is Mac Pro, full-on Mac Pro power. So like I think there's a pretty good... I think with the Mac Studio coupled with the Mini, Apple's got a really nice ramp there that they didn't used to have, where it's like take your pick, compact, desktop, Max. We got them all.
Yeah.
And I think that it's the best lineup they've ever had. I mean, they say that all the time, but it's really the cleanest lineup where you have this gradient that starts at $600 and goes to 12,000. And there is something there that you can just kind of place into it inside the desktop, inside of the laptops. And I think it does partially have to do with the fact that they are no longer constrained to somebody else's chips. Yeah. You know, like they're now, you know, we're seeing this kind of chaotic start of all these chips in all these different places, and they're getting them done as they can get them done. And I think that it'll settle into, you know, this year we're having, you know, I think it will settle eventually into the M3 is in 1 year, the M4 is in another year, and everything is very similar all the way through to the phone and the iPad. And it just really makes them much, much more efficient, and it's easier to code for. It's easier to, you know, there's so many things that this makes efficient, and it makes it, again, increasingly difficult to compete with.
Mark Gurman, by the way, is saying that Apple's already working on a less expensive Vision Pro. I wonder when it comes out, if it comes out in, say, March of next year, if they might offer two versions by then. They might say
German says it's like a couple years off.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And I don't think that, again, I think that there's a Vision Pro. I think the next one will be the Vision,
right?
You know, or there might be even another Vision Pro before the Vision comes out, because I think that this felt like, I mean, for all the stuff that we know about video production and video and constraints and so on and so forth, this felt like a great step forward. That's a huge jump over where everybody else is, and like half a step short of what we know is kind of where a lot of people are going to land, which is the 120, 6K or 8K per eye. And so we know that there, it's a little short. I think the Pro will probably close that gap either completely or partially on the next version to do that.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see if they decide to plan these things out the same way that they've done like the MacBooks, where yes, they could be making $500, $600, $700, $800 MacBooks. They've decided that they never have to sell a MacBook for less than $1,000, or ideally, and the sweet spot will be 11 or 12, and that will be the floor for like what the technology is. Or if they decide that it would behoove them to have a consumption only version of this that costs like that would be like the iPad version of this, where no, it's not really going to be for, yeah, you can use it as a 4K display for your Mac, but it really isn't for like running its own apps. It really is just for being in full virtualized experiences. Like Jason said, that they've got three different kinds of like basic apps that run one of them. This would be not the one that gives you a fully immersive environment running apps and virtual screens in front of you. This would be only for the kinds where, hey, watch this movie in 3D, or hey, play this game in 3D.
I didn't ask you about the field of view again, Jason.
I didn't notice any tunnel vision is the short version. Yeah. I didn't do like a real like glance around test, but I felt like I was in perfectly normal vision with peripheral vision and all of that. Kind of distracted by the dinosaurs, yeah. But yeah. It seemed pretty fine for
show
me.
Title.
Yeah, well, that's the point, is if you didn't notice, you didn't notice. That's good. And yeah. That's the real problem, yeah. By the way, with the Magic Leap and the HoloLens, is that they have these letterbox, more yeah. like mail slot views of the world. Yeah. And that's
no tunnel vision for me. I mean, I've heard it described that way. And people worried about nausea. Again, like all I can tell you is, it seems to me that Apple, I mean, they've designed an entire real-time operating system layer and a real-time processor in order to make sure that there's very little latency, and that I guess the chip is right on the back of the displays in order to reduce latency there. Like I didn't experience anything that I would say was like a red flag about it. It all seemed really, really, really good to me. That said, if you're super sensitive, I think in the long run, you're going to have to go to an Apple store and try it out to see. But yeah. it seemed like they nailed that experience.
I think it's frame rate. Like I can just say that generally
90 frames is pretty good. 90
frames a second turns
pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty darn good. And so that makes I think that really does make a huge difference in how people perceive that process and resolution as well.
Alex, I'm curious, not to hijack this, but I'm curious, what's the frame rate of reality, or more to the point, what's the frame rate at which it's indistinguishable from reality for humans?
There's a lot of opinions about that.
Okay.
So some people will say that it's 240 frames or somewhere in the vicinity of 240 frames. most people think it's somewhere between in the mid 90s. So the mid, so the 96 frame, the, you know, so most people think that that's where it becomes hard for most people to distinguish it. But there are definitely, like everything else, there's people who can hear further out. There's people who are more perceptive to those things. And so, so, but what we, what people find is that when they say it feels like real at a high enough resolution, it's about, it's in that 92, 96, 98 frame. So they're very close. At 120, they're going to, at 120, they're going to be over what most people perceive as real time. There, there's a lot of idiosyncrasies about 120 frames a second that we're still trying to work out, but there's, but at that rate, at that frame rate, which is what every monitor that you have, your phones, everything's kind of moving towards that, that frame rate. You know, that's where we really feel like it, it, it looks, it feels very fluid. But again, some people will say that people can perceive it even up to 480 frames a second. But most people aren't conscious to it, after somewhere in the mid 90s.
I think this is why I was really, really pleased that there are so many people out that got demos, and so like if it's true that hundreds of people got these demos, that's a very, very wide spectrum. Like Joanna Stern of Wall Street Journal is one of the, has one of the, had one of the most valuable write ups, and she didn't have a great time with it. I mean, she didn't like, she wasn't blowing chunks or anything like that, but she was kind of glad to take it off at the end for exactly that reason. And I'll have to update my knowledge about frame rate. The last time I really looked at like research papers, when they're doing it was a there were a couple studies that did like, hey, we're going to be putting a high definition high frame rate monitor next in one, in some rooms we're going to be putting a window in other rooms, so we're going to see who figures out that they're looking at a monitor and not at a window. And that magic number was in the 300s, but that's, that could have been a completely different set of constraints. It could have been, and also I don't think if I remember correctly that it wasn't, they weren't trying to say, well, let's keep reducing the frame rate to see like to the level that you're talking about. So I'll have to update my knowledge.
I asked ChatGPT what the frame rate of reality is, and it refused to answer. So I'm canceling my subscription right now.
I'm not going to tell
it's
you.
It's unreal.
The Matrix doesn't want you to know the tech details. They don't want you to see the product chart.
A big piece of this is that it's the return on effort as well. So at, you know, it's not necessarily, that's why some people are saying you might need 480 frames to be absolutely to handle, but 99% of your perception at 120 frames per second is handled. Sure. And the amount of technical lift to go from 120 to anything higher, the amount of technical lift to get to 120 is a big deal for everybody right now. So I think that it's, I think that there, a lot of folks are looking at, you know, again, most people think that the, that that base rate of really people feeling like it's fluid is in the mid 90s.
But this is a really big question though, because it's one thing when you, it's one thing when you've got like a gaming headset where people are going to be using it for half, however long it takes to entertain yourself in an airline seat, say. Whereas if Apple is really saying that, no, this is spatial computing, this is really a computing platform, we expect you to spend like a full workday or even half a workday parked with this thing on your face, looking at virtual screens, that is the Iron Man triathlon of this kind of technology, where if it's good enough for 2 hours, it might absolutely be unbearable for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. I think that the weight is going to be, you know, a challenge for them. I think that, that for, to leave it on for,
did it feel heavy?
Day, I think,
Jason,
I didn't know. I mean,
I think it's about a pound from what
the MetaQuest 2, I thought it was not unreasonable, but again, I couldn't get it to fit right, and also I only used it for half an hour, and half an hour session is not a two, as Andy said, is not a 2 hour session, it's not 8 hours. I will say that Apple actually suggested in their presentations that you could wear it all day and do work, and I find that fascinating, and it seemed like a wild claim to me, and it makes me think that there are people at Apple who use it all day and are fine. So right, like, and maybe those people are outliers, I don't know, but I was surprised that they actually seemed to say, yeah, that's a use case. Use it all day for computing.
You going to buy one?
I mean, it's my job too, but I'll tell you, after that 3D experience, if they've got lots of good 3D and immersive content, I would buy one anyway, because I am one of those people who would be like, oh my God. Like, I have watched movies on the MetaQuest 2, and it's its display is terrible, but the 3D movie experience is actually pretty good. And if I could do that, and then there's share play, if I have friends who've got it, and like, I can see a use case there. If they do a sports thing, if I can watch a baseball game every week in that immersive 3D environment, it's going to be tough for me to say no to. But it's also my job. So I the business will buy it, yeah, and I'll write it off.
I'm sure. Well, and it's also, you spend a lot of your day alone in your garage. So
I think that's an important point. It's absolutely true that these are solitary experiences. The problem with the movie watching thing is that I watch almost every movie I watch with my wife, and we're not going to have two headsets, and I'm not going to watch it. Yeah. So, right. And so, like, how much of this conception is people who are alone, and what are the use cases? And the truth is, and this is the thing, is if I had one, it's more likely I would use it for work than for pleasure, only because I'm sitting at my desk all by myself all day working. And so if it was a productivity boost for that, you know, I just push my display away and use that instead, that would be fine. If it worked, right? A lot of ifs there. If you're somebody who, you know, maybe it is when you're watching on a plane or something like that, or I have a friend who watches most of his TV shows at night in bed after his wife has fallen asleep, right? Like, it's just a thing. Like, I could see scenarios, but you do have to kind of come up with solitary scenarios for this stuff. And that is weird.
I did think that it was interesting that I suddenly realized, oh my goodness, they did the whole prehistoric thing in 3D. Like when they did that, yeah, I was like, that whole series is all going to be like, they're going to have experiences that are going to, and to go through the amount of expense that it took to make that. Mm-hmm. Knowing what they know now, I suddenly realized a lot of things that they built may have, not necessarily all the video stuff, but a lot of the CG stuff that they've done could potentially be done in, you know, it could be re-rendered or is already rendered in a stereo environment. It is interesting that Apple TV is something that, because Apple's spending money on that as well, you know, building stuff for this headset is much more seamless than it is for Meta. You know, like it is, you know, like, oh, we can just shoot this, you know, because
What does it take to shoot it? Do you need the IMAX stereo cameras, or what would it take?
Yeah, I mean, so for the level that they're doing it at, the real challenge you get into is that you need a lot of control over the cameras. It's a lot more complicated than putting the cameras next to each other, because you have to manage the interocular distance. That's the distance between the eyes. And then you also have to manage convergence. So, and that is where the cameras, if they're sitting right butted up against each other, you can't manage the convergence properly, which means that, because when we look at things, you know, if you look at something really close, you're cross-eyed because your eyes are converging on that point. And so the issue is, it's not straight out. It is converged on a piece. And so you have some pretty complex systems. So what we tend to do is we have one camera looking through basically a teleprompter and, you know, a mirrored glass, and another one looking up. And so then you have to build all the gears and so that they all work. It's kind of, it's a very, you reverse all of those. And so now you have these two cameras that are looking at it, and they're in the right place. And now you can manage your focus, your zoom, and also your convergence. And all of that is pretty complicated. Now, you can, for 2D, end up delivering just one of those eyes, left eye typically. But so you can do that 2D delivery, which, what's interesting is Apple's new video format is designed, the MVHVAC is designed to, if you only have a 2D display, and they talk about it a couple of times in their delivery, they want to make sure that you're going to deliver one eye, when you're doing those things, if you don't have stereo. So the stereo, it's a big rig, but you have to remember that we're not shooting live, and there's lots of smaller rigs. So there's going to be an experience, the Canon R5 with its stereo, the Canon R5 has a stereo lens that's 180 that works really, really well for doing VR. And I think you're going to see a lot of little stuff done that way. We have to remember that Apple did, you know, so the 180 experiences are a different thing than movies.
Right.
And the other thing is you have to really decide whether movies are the right thing for someone to watch, because in full VR, lots of cuts and big camera moves goes back to what we were talking about earlier. So frame rate is one thing. Moving the camera a lot is another.
Yeah.
And you can make people feel pretty sick pretty quickly if you're not careful.
Oh, yeah, I get sick.
And that's why it has to be Halo in a virtual on a regular
screen, because the head bob and the movement makes me queasy.
Right.
Without
the virtual movie theater reduces that, right? You actually put it in on a screen.
As long as you have a frame.
And you're not hanging. You're in a frame. You can see seats around you. There's a reflection on the ceiling of the lighting from the, like, you do that and it feels okay. But Alex is right. Apple actually built their own rig to do those 180 immerses, which is interesting, but everybody's going to want to, you know, start exploring with that. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. And then a footnote for what Alex said is, if that sounds complicated and all that, that's why most Hollywood movies are shot in 2D. And then there is a 3D production house that creates,
which is what killed it.
A 3D version.
Yeah, because it's not as good, right? It's not as good.
It's like those 3D comic books we used to see where there's like, they're just planes of depth instead of it being truly. So but if you look at a movie that's shot in proper 3D, it looks
amazing. Does it look like this pizza coming out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that is the future.
3D house of pizza.
Pizza.
Whoa. Would you like some more toppings?
And the big question is what they do with these, you know, the big question will be, what do they do with these two lenses that are at the top? And do they either computationally match them or do they actually make another lens here so that the phone can generate 3D? And if the phone can generate, if you can pick up a phone and go like this, and while this is much closer than interocular distance, the thing to remember is that the hydrogen, the red hydrogen was even closer than these two lenses are. And so what that, you know, so that whole silliness of, I mean, not silly, but whole silliness of putting something on to shoot something on a birthday is less silly if someone just picks up their phone and shoots stereo for the headset, sends it to their friends, and they're able to put that on and feel like they were there is a much different.
Cooler.
It's got to be coming, right? Apple doesn't announce future products, but that was screaming, we are going to do 3D capture on a future iPhone. Yeah. If and not this fall, the next fall. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like it's going to be such a bummer if they, you know, being able to have this phone right before the headset comes out and being able to generate all that content, it feels like a really missed opportunity if it doesn't come out this year. But it'll definitely, as you said, definitely by next year you'll be able to.
But you could do it in this form factor, you think?
You could. You could do it in that form factor. You wouldn't have to put it so that I shot.
Or do you put a second camera bump on the other end of the phone?
I would strongly prefer the second camera further apart because the 3D is way better.
Right. Yeah.
But with computational photography, with the LiDAR, with a lot of other things, they can do a lot of work on that feels pretty good. I do think that they might need a fourth sensor only because I think that they're going to want to have those two sensors. I think it's going to be really hard to make those two sensors work perfectly together. You really want them to both be the same focal length. Yeah. So the 1X is both of those, or the 0.5 or whatever one they pick. There's two of them and they shoot stereo and then there's the other two.
Taiku has it in our chat room. They sell two phones.
I've already built that rig.
Get your second iPhone so that you can shoot for the Vision Pro.
Have that rig around somewhere. Hold on.
I don't think that's terribly silly either, because I could see having a native 3D capture via two sensors as part of the Pro phone line. But now you're getting into how much would it cost to have that extra lens array and that extra sensor into every phone that they're expecting everybody to buy? And is that going to be what gets people to say, you know what, I don't want to buy the Pro, I'll buy the normal one. I read another paper about an idea for using camera, like there's some actual unavoidable jitter, like when you're actually holding a phone and trying to shoot. There is an idea for an algorithm that would be able to essentially use that jitter to capture like acceptable 3D from a single lens. I would love to see an AI solution to that, like something that builds a nerf.
Don't forget, they have the LiDAR sensor on everyone, so they've got full depth data. They could do a fake 3D based on the depth data. They just wouldn't be capturing sort of like behind the corners for the parallax, but they could definitely do it. I would say, Andy, I can imagine them doing a 3D photos display on the iPhone as well. So the people who don't have a headset can still sort of like do that thing where you can kind of like tilt it a little bit and get that 3D almost lenticular kind of style effect. I could see them doing that as part of it. And that would be because if it's this limited product and then they put this feature in the iPhone and you're like, I don't have that headset, but if you've got other ways to display it that are like cool enough, you can get away with it.
I think that this is part of the halo effect of the Vision Pro, that people are going to be capturing with these $3,500 $100 devices that they already have, all kinds of like really cool content. And then Apple is going to want to figure out a way to give people on the ground, so to speak, the same experience with their phones that will get people to think, oh, wow, I could be shooting video like this, or I could be seeing this much better than just simply sliding this, just like what the Google Cardboard used to be, where here is a headset, just slide your phone into the back of it, right, and we will fake it for you.
Yeah, I think that if they put another lens in, which the hard part is that all the computational stuff looks okay. Even Apple's computational stuff looks okay, you know, and I think that they want to make sure that experience on the headset is amazing. And I think that, and I don't think they'll put it in all the phones. I think this is the pro version. So you put basically in the pro version is a 3D shooting option. And the other versions are not. So I think that's where you'd put it. You know, I couldn't find my headsets out in the garage. I'm not going to go get it. But what I did is I printed these two pieces. I printed a piece that had, you know, if you think about having the phone here, and after some iterations, I learned, you know, so you have the two here. What you have to do is line these up. So then I had another one that was like this. And then I had the other phone.
Oh, interesting.
Like that.
You rotated it.
So
yeah.
I had to rotate it around, which worked fine. And so I just had a big, that looks pretty funny in Goat Rock up in Bodega Bay with someone walking around with this rig. I got a lot of attention. Anyway, but I was shooting some stuff here and it worked exceptionally well. As far as stereo goes, cause I got, these were, when I printed them, I made them interocular distance. So they did what they needed to do. The problem is, again, gets back into the finer things of, convergence. So they're both going straight. And getting both cameras to start at the same time was hard because they don't sync together. So you have to kind of hit them and then you have to find the frame and you would put your hand out in front and snap and then you'd go back and everything else. And so, It's not, you can jerry rig it, but it's not, but Apple could obviously, I think when I started playing with it, in stereo, I was like, oh, this would be really nice.
I wonder how many, I wonder if the memo went out to producers for Apple TV Plus, just keep this in mind, shoot it this way or something, you know.
I think you have to really decide you're going to do it. I think that they would, you know, and I think that it's a huge advantage for Apple to own the broadcast rights for MLS. There is so much. That's every time you start, it is massive. Like that purchase makes a ton of sense.
Now it makes sense.
Because the thing is that being able to say, I mean, the amount of infrastructure that you have to deal with broadcasters, because their job is not your job. They don't care about you. Like I've done tons of 360 and stereo at concerts, at, you know, these things. And the fact that Apple can say, I have a piece of content that is paying for itself in some other way, and I still also control it. So me saying I'm going to do an Ed Sheeran show, let's say, and I'm going to pay for it and it's going to get distributed on Apple Plus, comes out of that budget. But oh, I have the ability to put the cameras exactly where I want them because I own the space, is massive, you know, for Apple to be able to not have to deal with all the other things that we deal with when we're trying to shoot these, because people are like, well, you can only put the camera over here and you can only put, don't put it in the way of here. And people can't see if you put the camera there. All those things go away with Apple money and Apple infrastructure. And so the ability to generate some of this content is going to be, it's going to be pretty, they have a much better chance of building compelling content because they have more control.
I'm going to defer a conversation much needed about the new iOS 17 and the new Mac OS Sonoma. I love saying that. Till next episode, we'll save that because we're running out of time. There is a couple of Apple TV Plus stories, though. There is a reason to finally finish watching season one of Foundation, because season two is imminent. They've just released they just released the trailer for the new season today. I'm going to stick with, to be honest with you, what do they call it? I want to call it Hole, but it's really Silo.
Silo.
I'm going to stick with Silo. And there is a note, good job, Ant Pruitt. He has snagged Hugh Howey, the author of the novels that Silo's based on, Wool. And so, he will be on are for the club members. He will be on a special club twit event on June 29th, 1 p.m. So towards the end of this month, Hugh C. Howey joins Ant Pruitt in conversation. If you're a Silo fan or a Wolf fan, June 29th at 1 p.m. That's a good reason to join club twit. These are This is Ann is the community manager there, and he's been charged with making it exciting to hang out in Club Twit. And I think he's done a really fantastic job. We've got a bunch of events coming up besides that June 29th one. Sean Powers Fireside Chat. He's the one of the hosts of Floss Weekly. Will be Thursday at 9 a.m. The fall June 29th, Thursday, the Terraformers, Stacy's Book Club. And immediately, not immediately, but shortly after, on the same day, the Fireside Chat with Hugh Howey. And the booze-fueled Inside Twit After Hours, July 14th. Rod Pyle will do a Fireside Chat on the 27th. What do you get with Club Twit? Let me tell you. You get ad-free versions of all of our shows. You get shows that we don't put out for anybody but Club Twit members, like that Hugh Howey interview, Hands-On Mac with Micah Sargent, Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, Hands-On Windows with Paul Thurrott, Untitled Linux Show, and go on and on. Those are shows that eventually, we hope, will become public, like This Week in Space. It started in the club. The reason we can do that is club members subsidize it. They pay their $7 a month. They also get access to the Discord, which is really fantastic, a great community where you can chat about the shows, but you can also chat about other topics of interest to our audience, which is a lot of fun. John, it's not going to be booze-fueled, you say?
It's not.
All right. Well,
completely. Maybe like 10%?
10%. Okay. Fine. Oh. Some of you will be booze-fueled.
and is bringing the whiskey.
If you're not a member, we would sure appreciate it if you join Club Twit. twit.tv/Club Twit. I don't know if you've heard, but the podcast advertising environment has gotten tougher and tougher and tougher. And we see a time where Spotify, iHeart, Apple, Amazon will eat up the podcasting space and all the advertising. But we want to keep doing these shows. I just would like to keep doing this. So it looks like the way forward really is going to be club membership. So please, twit.tv/Club Twit. It's a great way to get a lot of extra content, a lot of extra fun, but also to support what we do going forward. Thank you in advance. Our picks of the week coming up in just a second. But first, a word from ZocDoc. When somebody's really good at what they do, you know, whether it's Jason Snell at Six Colors or a waiter who really is, you know, serving you and explaining what you're eating, things like that, or maybe a doctor who really tells you what's going on, then you know that you're in good hands, right? A good doctor makes you feel heard, makes you feel at ease, helps you feel better. But not everybody wants the same kind of doctor. Some people want doctors that are, you know, give you all the options. Some people say, tell me what to do, doc. I can't absorb all of that. Well, you can find the right doctor fast with ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app, the only free app that lets you find and book doctors. But this is the most important part, who are patient reviewed. So you can see exactly how that doctor operates from actual patients. Also, you can search for a doctor that takes your insurance. It has openings when you need them, treats almost every condition under the sun. It's not just MDs, all dentists, chiropractors. I was looking for a gerontologist for my mother-in-law. It's fast. It's easy. You find the person that takes the insurance. No more doctor roulette. And you, by the way, no more going out on the internet looking for questionable reviews. These are reviews that are vetted, actual customers, actual patients of the doctors. ZocDoc is your trusted guide to connect you to a new doctor or your favorite doctor you haven't met yet in a few taps. Just go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Download the app. I know you can go to the App Store and download it, but we want to get credit. So go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak, and you'll get the link to the App Store from there. Book an appointment with a few taps in the app. Start feeling better faster with ZocDoc. It's free. Find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. So if you're not feeling so good right now, you could do it. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. ZocDoc. They are fan. I've used them. They're great. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. And again, I know you're smart. You could take your phone and download the app, but then they wouldn't know you saw us. You saw this ad. So please just do me a favor. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. All right, picks of the week time. Let's start with Alex Lindsay.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
So I have, I'm hearing myself back. Oh, there we go. I only have an aspect ratio. No, I'm fine now.
Okay.
I only have an aspect ratio to share with you, which is nine by 19.
Really?
9 by 19.
9 by 19.
You know what that aspect ratio is?
Is that your camera phone?
It's just your phone. It's the phone screen. So 9 by 19. If you're using Midjourney, remember that you can just set AR, dash AR. And the only reason I said this is that I had like one lock screen or two or three lock screens on my phone. And now I don't know
what got me into
doing it. So if you look at this, let's see here. Let me show you. This is like, I'll just show you some examples. I just started experimenting with it. So here you have like,
that's beautiful.
You have like these little pictures, you know, like this is
these
like,
are Picasso, all
like, this is all Midjourney.
Oh,
all of these are Midjourney. You know, like you have these little, I was playing with octopuses for some reason. This is some more high, you know, ones. There's my, then you have a shark. The shark and these go together, I guess. Anyway, so but it even does the little thing where it cuts the little bit of the nose out of the
Look at that. So it's below the clock. Like yeah.
So it's nice. And then there's a couple more of these. And what's interesting about it, and then I got into all these geeky ones, and then I made some for my wife.
Give me a prompt so I can enter it here. So it's AR.
Well, you just do whatever you want. So,
but how do you get the aspect ratio?
Oh, it's just --AR --9:16.
9:16. I'm entering it in right now.
Dragon then, scales.
Oh, and do you do any special lighting prompts?
A bunch of these. Oh, and by the way, this, to take it one step further, I was experimenting. I haven't gotten working yet, but this is the little square underneath the that's made by Photoshop. So I said,
I selected
that area and I said, produce an LCD screen produce an LCD screen inside. So I use generative AI in Photoshop to put a screen into the, which is easier than trying to get it to work. This was like a macro shot of, overhead macro shot, steampunk circuit board. And then I gave it, I think I said something like a A7S3, gave it some lenses and things. And that's what I ended up with, you know. And, here's like,
oh, I like, you these.
Know, gears and They're scales. Gorgeous. I love like these little things like this. And so it's what's interesting about it is, of course, it's not just that it's a photo or it feels like a photo. It's that it fits. So it's actually building the photo for the aspect ratio that you're doing. And so it's for having fun, like in all of these, if you look at these, you know, all of these are like, that is a perfectly framed for my phone. They're all framed. They're all like, they're composed for that aspect ratio. It's not just cutting something out of a photo. It is actually being, you know, it's composing the photo, you know, for the frame that it has, you know. So anyway, it was one of those things that I don't know how I did it or I mean why I did it at first, but now it's kind of like I'm sitting in line somewhere, I'm waiting for something, I'm like, I wonder what an octopus would look like underwater.
What a great idea.
so anyway, it's I went from having none to having lots and then sending friends some of them like, hey, this one you probably like on your phone. Like to family, my daughter and my wife and son.
So this is really a tip, not a pick. But when you do your image generation,
it's kind of a side. Yeah.
It's good.
It's $9.
When you're using Midjourney or your whatever, in Midjourney, you do the prompt and then you add
--AR --9:16.
Very nice.
I'm sorry, 9:19. And it will, it's really 19.5. I did some research on it after I got going. But
9 by 16 will work.
9 by 19.
9 by 19. Oh, I thought you said 16.
I that's for TikTok, but 9:19.
Got it.
That'll be the same as your, at least my phone. I don't know if all the Apple phones are the same, but at least the 14 Pro, it's 9:19.
A computer motherboard lit from above Dramatic Lighting dash AR9:19. I'm going to try that right now.
Dash dash. It's dash dash, dash, dash AR space
9:19.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alec Lindsay.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some fun making wallpapers. Very cool.
I apologize to everyone for how much time that will suck up if you start playing with it too much.
It's too much fun. Andy Yanako, pick of the week.
A very quick one. I'm a sucker for every single organization outlining notes taking tool that I've never heard of. Just discovered one last week called Bike, and it's made by the same guy who did Task Paper. So really, what I like about it is really, really clean. It's not like Omni Outliner, which tries to be. It could be anything you want it to be if it involves organizing information. This really is a straightforward outliner, but the payoff for that is that it's very, very clean, very, very fast. I love that there's little animations that take you through the outline as you go. Very, very scriptable, very, very workflowable. And I've only used it for a week, so now it's basically on my radar. But if there are times where I've recommended Omni Outliner to people, because it is, I think, one of the greatest apps I have ever used, you know, since I was a child. And in terms of this has transformed like what I do, outliners kind of do that. I think that Omni Outliner is kind of the tops in all of that. However, it could be a bit much for some new users. And so if you're just looking for an outliner that is better than just simply markdown hyphens, this is worth looking at. It's licensed. You get a 3-day free trial, or I think 2 weeks free trial if you're downloading it through the App Store. And it's $30 a month. Excuse me, $30 a year. So it's also less expensive than Omni Outliner Pro. Not more expensive than the basic version, but less expensive than
the Omni Outliner Pro. It's a bicycle for your mind, right? Hog-based software is Jesse Grosjean. He's great. I love all of his software. He's been around for some time. One of the longtime Mac programmers. This is a great little tool. Bike outliner. Have you ever tried LogSeek?
No.
Oh, I'm going to recommend this. I'll give you a little quick recommendation. It's very similar. It's an outliner, but it stores as Markdown in your on your hard drive. Let me open LogSeek and I'll show you how I use it. It's same kind of, it's not as pretty, you know, you've got the animations, but you know, this is line one, and then you can do it line two. I'll show you what I did during the Apple event. I did the outline here, and I was able to put in the feature quilts as we're talking, paste them in and so forth. It's a really, this is a not web-based, this is local on my hard drive. It's an open source project, though, so it's free, although I pay, I actually contribute back to it so that I can do this sync. So it runs on everything I have.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it multi-platform beyond Apple? Is it also like
Android, Linux, Windows, iOS? Android's got a very good mobile. So that's the chief advantage to me. You know, I'm very cross platform, so I have to be able to use.
Yeah.
I
got to say, Ulysses text editor is getting me like, oh my God, it's going to be another factor towards if I switch back to iPhone, it's probably because Ulysses is becoming a bigger and bigger part of my workflow for everything. And it's a bummer that I can't like check things out or add things to things or edit like on my Android phone.
Well, I know how you feel about that. And since you use Android and Mac, this is a perfect LogSeek, LogSeek. It is I've gone from Rome research. It's kind of a local Rome research, Notion. I've gone Obsidian, and this is the one I've really stuck with. It's really fantastic.
There are people like us that like we've got what we want, but we're always looking for.
You're always looking better for the next best one. Yeah,
that's right,
Jason.
Apple Vision Pro. Oh no, I'll do.
Yeah,
I'll do a product.
No, wait till next year for that. Okay,
that's all right. Libby has been picked here before. Adam Angst by My Records picked it in 2018. He was just recycling Andy's pick from 2018, but I'm gonna, it's been too long for me to tell people because you should know about Libby because it matters for all of you. So Libby is an iPhone to iPad app that is a front end to Overdrive, which is the system that most public libraries use to let you borrow ebooks.
Yes.
And this is a thing a lot of people don't even know that, you know, they're like, oh, I only read ebooks. My library is irrelevant. It's not. Most libraries have support for OverDrive, which means you can check out a book, you can get in line.
If and audiobooks, I might add.
Maybe. And, yeah. And yes, not only can you check out a book and send it to your e-reader, but it's got audiobooks too. And you just, it's an audiobook player, full featured audiobook player. So you can play it in the car or when you're taking a walk or whenever you listen to audiobooks. The experience in the US, it's actually really great because it's got a send to Kindle. If you're using a Kindle, I use Kobo e-readers. They work all over the world with Libby because they are integrated with OverDrive.
Yeah, they're like a partner.
Yeah, my understanding is that, and they used to be the same company. Kindle, I think integration is only in the US, so be warned. But if you have a Kobo, Kobos are awesome, by
the way. That's why I got a Kobo, is for Libby. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for, a Sonoma County library card.
And the other thing I'll point out is even if you go to your local library and you're disappointed they don't have OverDrive or whatever, you would be surprised. Check around other libraries in your area because, for example, if you're a resident of the state of Massachusetts, you can get a Boston Public Library card. If you're a resident of the state of California, you can get a San Francisco Public Library card. You may be able to get. And also your library may have reciprocal arrangements with other libraries that you can put into Libby and search through those and find the book wherever it's available or available the soonest. Anyway, and it's got a nice interface where you basically, if you have to get in line, it sends you a push notification when your book is ready. You can defer if you're like, oh no, I'm already reading something. You can say, you know, let me know in 20 days. And then you stay at the head of the line, which is really nice. A lot of good stuff. Great for audiobooks. Highly recommend if you are a reader or a listener. Your local library is going to give you access to stuff that you had no idea existed. And Libby is a great way to do it. So check it out. It's free from OverDrive. Very good. I love it. And it has dramatically increased my wife is a librarian. She's always like, you want me to bring you a paper book home? And I'm like, no, I'm done with that. I've moved on in my life. But now I use Libby all the time and I'm reading lots of library books on my Kobo.
It worked for me. I agree with you 100%. It's a, you know, it's a great way to get a kind of unlimited amount of content. Still checking it out from the library. So it's like getting a library book, right?
You have 21 days. And if somebody's waiting for it, you know, if nobody's waiting for it, you can renew. It works really well. It's great.
Yeah. Libby, overdrive.com, or get a Kobo.
Yeah, you can just check it out right from your Kobo.
That is it for MacBreak Weekly. Thank you, Jason, for giving us your first person hands-on perspective on the Vision Pro. I really appreciate it. Next week, do Mac OS Sonoma OS 17 for iPad and iPhone. I think there's some really interesting features in there. We can talk about that. And, of course, all the Apple news. Jason Snell is at sixcolors.com. If you can't wait till next Tuesday, he's there all week long.
I am there all week long. I won't be here next Tuesday because my daughter's graduating from college.
Congratulations.
Yay! But that means I won't be here. Sorry about that. They put it on a Tuesday, literally during MacBreak Weekly. So
that's hysterical. Are you going to it?
I going up to Oregon for that. So that's going to be great.
Nice.
But yes, I will be writing lots of things on Six Colors and we'll be talking. I mean, we have all summer to talk about those bands too. So I'm sure we'll keep talking about it.
You also have an M2 Ultra Mac Studio review right now on Six Colors, which is definitely worth checking out.
How do you write a review about something that didn't change very much? Well, you know, you try.
Yeah. I've been reading all the 15-inch MacBook Air reviews, and it's like, well, it's bigger.
Even harder.
It's bigger.
Yep. It's bigger.
The screen's 15
inches.
One louder,
isn't it?
And as you say, sometimes bigger is better.
Sometimes it is better. Yeah.
Sixcolors.com/Jason. He does a lot of podcasts, all of them wonderful.
Including this one.
And, well, this one is, you know, one of them.
It is.
One of them. There's a Six Colors podcast. There's the Incomparable.
Tuesday.
I bet you upgrade with Mike Hurley was pretty interesting after you both tried the Vision.
Yeah, we just did. We did that episode in my office yesterday. Nice. So we both got to kind of exchange our experiences with that.
Because Mike's normally in the UK.
That's right. But he was here for WWDC was sticking around.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Mr. Andy Inoko, AI for the rest of us. When are you going to be on GBH next?
Well, unless Trump gets indicted again, sometime next week.
Do you keep getting pushed off for Trump indictments?
This is the second time I've been bumped because of Donald Trump being indicted for something. Like that was supposed to be on last Friday, and of course the indictments got broke like on Thursday night, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to continue to write up everything I'm going to need for tomorrow, but I don't think I'm going to
have a feeling.
Use this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they might be able to get me back on Thursday. Definitely going to be on a week from Friday at 12:45 p.m. at the Boston Public Library. So go to WGBHnews.org to watch it live or later.
Very nice. OfficeHours.global is where you will find our good friend Alex Lindsay, really full of great information. What are you working on this week?
You know, it's a busy week, so it's as always. But we've been really working on improving the every second hour. We talked about trademark law yesterday. Incredible attorney,
interesting,
answered our questions about copyright and trademark and understanding what those things are. We talked about 3D printing this morning, kind of an intro to 3D printing to get people. We're going to be talking a lot about that over the summer and into the fall. Gain staging, the incredible subject of gain staging is tomorrow. So this kind of gives you the minutiae that we get into. And then we covered Cinegear about a week and a half ago. We're going to talk about that on Thursday and what we did in live views and cameras and stuff like that. How Office Hours actually works. There's a huge machine on the back end that makes Office Hours work. So we're going to talk about that on Friday with the team. And then finally, we're kicking off our disability or accessibility focused series. So there'll be 7 weeks of talking about disability awareness and etiquette is the first one. But we're not only talking about accessibility, but we're also experimenting with it. So you'll see us putting ASL into the show, and we're going to be working with captions and working with a lot of other things. So we're using it as kind of a lab on how to actually produce a show that is fully accessible, as well as talking about those subject matters. And it's usually when we do education takes the summer off, the teachers take the summer off. And so we're moving to accessibility for the next 7 weeks. And wow. So Saturdays will be really interesting.
That's really good. I think that's a great idea. Lots of good stuff this week. OfficeHours.global. If you want to hire Alex for your next event, 090.media is his biz. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Jason. Good. Congratulations on your daughter, Jason. That's wonderful.
Yay.
One less tuition check is always nice. Yep. Yeah. I remember that. My daughter delivers her thesis defense for her master's on Saturday. And I think that will be the last tuition check. We'll see.
Nice.
You never know. Nice. She's hinting about getting a PhD. Which would be funny to call her Dr. Abby. I think that would be fun. So maybe there'll be more. Tell your children.
Think of all the dad jokes, though. Oh, doctor, man. Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Don't do that, Dad. Come on. Let's just order.
Oh, she needs no encouragement in that regard. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We do Mac Break Weekly on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Next week, I guess I'll have a 15-inch MacBook Pro to show you. I was hoping I'd have it for today. MacBook Air, I'm sorry. I was hoping I'd have it for today. But do stop by. The live stream is at twit.tv/live. If you're watching live, chat live. Our open to all chat room is irc.twit.tv. And of course, club members get their own special club level access at on the Discord. But I can't tell you where that is because, it's private. You can, just kidding. After the fact, you'll have to just go to twit.tv/club twit. You'll find out. After the fact, we do put the shows up on air, online, ad supported at twit.tv/MBW. There's also a YouTube channel dedicated to Mac Break Weekly. Best way to get any show you hear on the network is through a podcast player like Overcast or Pocket Casts or Apple Podcasts, that kind of thing. Find your favorite. You can search for Mac Break Weekly individually. Search for Twit as a whole. There's even a all of Twit subscription you can do and get every show. It's nice to have that sitting there on your phone just waiting for you to listen to or watch whenever you're in the mood. But do please subscribe. That helps us too. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. It's break time. Is over. Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.